Honourable members, we are here for a long haul, right? We are here for a long haul, we are going to be here until 5. So you must brace yourself for that. Not a purpose night at 1 o'clock. It's a real business. I must welcome you, honorable members and our guests. And I'm sure everybody is aware that this is a freedom month. Are you alive? I thought everybody is still on the Freedom Month. This is a very important month, the Workers' Month. And it says we must know how to handle those who have employed. And think of what happened to them long, long time ago in America. This is all it started. We're not going to waste time, but I would love to welcome the Deputy Minister of Communications. Honorable Mohammed Sala. And it will be fitting for us to say our congratulations. That the president of our country saw it fit for him to declare you there. Quite a demanding one, you know. You have been here. So you are not a newcomer. You know what it means. And we thought we'll also congratulate the minister, but she's not here. She won't be here. We'll come to that. I've been in touch with her before this meeting, as I was in touch with the Deputy Minister last week. And I think that's the kind of healthy relations that we must proceed handling ourselves. Congratulations, Comrade Tandy. The minister is, you recall, members, that at some stage there was a problem that is back on us in Vuwani. The former minister was always handling those issues. There is something that is called interministerial. The testing or what, committee or whatever, but it's dealing with the problems in Vuwani. And our minister and the department is key in that process. Secondly, the World Economic Forum. Honorable Van Damme, please.
I'm
please. Over and above that, there is World Economic Forum in Durban. When I spoke to her, day first day, she was just called by the. Let me start by saying, she was ready to come to the committee, and she's disappointed that she was rerouted by the president. And remember, it's the president who appoints ministers, and if the president calls to say the minister must go this direction, and whoever appointed by him must go this direction, sometimes it's difficult. That is why ministers have deputies. So that's the apology. She won't be part of us because of that. Not sure if you have written an apology, but I know because I was talking to her yesterday, even early this morning. Yeah, there is a written apology. I know of no other apology. Remember, there is nothing in front of me in terms of apologies. Remember, there are alternates in committees. And the Honorable Jachen is one of our alternates. So she has attended another committee. So those are the apologies, members. And I know you. No, the apologies come here. You don't raise your hand and say so and so. So those are the apologies. The Honorable Kalako is just running late. Honorable Fonda?
An apology.
Yeah. I mean, we had a lengthy debate as a committee about this very issue. And I am disappointed she's not here. She's either at Vuani or she's in Durban. I mean, she can't be at both places in one day.
She's in
Vuani. Now, for me, Minister of Communications, Vuani, I don't see the immediate link. I don't see why she has to be there herself physically, especially when she's been requested by Parliament, the body she accounts to come brief us on her portfolio. It's now the second meeting she's missed. I'd understand if it was the first one and it was a big issue of priority she needed to go to, but this is the second time, and quite frankly, I don't think Vuani is a good enough excuse in this instance. It's former minister, it was a constituency of Vuani, that's why she was always there. I don't see the link to communications. I don't think we're going to be monsters. I know that we know the minister's new. We're not going to blame her for the problems in the portfolio. We know that she's been handed a very, very difficult portfolio, and she has a lot of work to do to clean up the mess that's been left. So we're not going to be harsh on her, but I do think she needs to come and take us into her confidence so that we know that she's seized with the matters, we know where she's at, we know how she's thinking. Right now, we don't really know. I mean, she's done lots of radio interviews. I think she's been on the news circuit. So she can come and talk to us, too. So can you, Chair, please ask her maybe next week or whenever? We need to see her. And then since the Deputy Minister is here representing her, I assume she'll take all her questions.
I'm here on my own.
Okay, all right. That's not what that's not what the Chair said. All right.
Are you done with the conversation?
I wasn't talking to you.
Yes, you were saying? Honorable, I thought you were saying something. I hear you, Honorable Fonda. Honorable Kumba.
No, I. We're going to have to talk to them. it's not a comfortable thing to align with Van Damme. I think the story is correct. I thought I wanted to leave it there.
Thank you, Chair. I think the story is okay, given the fact that in the last week meeting we discussed this matter at length. I think the story is okay. I think it's very consistent with what we have seen at court. However, the report that you are giving, it cannot be undermined at any given time. That's the president gave instruction. That's how it must operate. However, the spirit is talk to her, she must find time to come and take her into confidence. I think that is why it's
okay. DM?
Thank you, Chair Peter. Chair, indeed, the spirit is something that you can't disagree with. But I want to put it very clear that I'm not representing anyone here in the committee. I'm representing myself and my office. Not unless in this committee, it's only ministers that are supposed to attend. Because to say I'm representing the minister, I think Honorable Van Damme is undermining the fact that President Zuma appointed me as a deputy minister to report to him, like the ministers are doing, and report to the committee when it is needed. You know, leave the fact that we did not get the invitation, something which I addressed with both the chair and the whip, but I am here because committees for me are very important. I know I've been here, done this whole thing, so I am not confused. So I'm here at my own peril, not representing anyone, but representing my office. So I thought it's important for me to clarify that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think this thing of invite must be sorted out. I think that term was it must be sorted out. For the committee meeting, I think the invite must go to both the minister and the deputy minister. That will help us not to come back to it. And I also said that when we discussed with the DM last week, we also have the what is called management committee, where we interact with. We are supposed to interact with both PLOs, the minister's PLO and the deputy minister's PLO, so that the issue of programs is dealt with at that level. So if that can be dealt with from now, so that we don't have that anymore. We'll now proceed, I'm told the agenda is was sent, I have it with you. If you can open your laptops, your tablet, you will see what the program says. Maybe the beginning of paperless. So that we rely on our soft copies. We'll get a briefing from the researcher on the analysis of annual performance plan on both departments, the government, the communications, and government communications. As well as the entities. It's not reflected here. Is it reflected here? Oh, yes, and the entities. So we'll get that analysis for departments and the analysis. We'll hand over to you. Here is written Content Advisor and Research. I'm going to do both of you. Yeah. Over to you, Content Advisor.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, and our guests. Our presentation basically today is just going to give us an overview of the entire MT process and how it should be monetized. I'll be dealing with the DOC while my fellow colleague will present on the GCIS method. Let's just start with the purpose of our plan. I think it's the foregone conclusion that it sets out the institution, what the institution intends to do in the upcoming financial year and during the MTS period in terms of how it's going to implement.
Can you use your mic?
Yes. In terms of how it's going to implement this strategic plan. Also, the purpose of the APP is to set out performance indicators and targets for the budget program and sub-programs where it's relevant. Also, where appropriate, the plan should include quarterly breakdowns of performance targets for the upcoming financial year. The next slide really gives you quite a picture of the structure of the APP. The first part being that of the department and the entities. The first issue that they need to look at is really to supply information on the updated situational analysis and also the revisions to the legislative and other mandates, as well as the overview of the budget and MTF estimates. The second part of the APP needs to look at the programs and sub-programs of the department, and of course reconcile performance targets and budgets, so to speak. And there's the whole talk around the smartness of the programs and the targets that the department puts. The third part looks at links to other plans, i.e. Long-term infrastructure plans, as well as conditional grants, as we've noticed or witnessed with the SAPC in the past year, and other public and private partnerships that may occur as a result. And also, of course, if there's any annexures, it would be an annexure to the revisions of the actual strategic plan, if there's any. In terms of program performance information, I think that in keeping up with the principles of enhancing transparency, accountability, and oversight, you know, the performance information really is collected by government institutions in the course of fulfilling their mandates and in implementing government policies. In fact, in keeping up with the issues like I raised of transparency, accountability, and oversight. National and provincial treasuries make use of program performance information for assessing the value for money for government activities. And as I mentioned before, the SMART principle becomes an important criteria when setting out the program. And by SMART, of course, I think the AG is the AG language mostly. It means that your targets need to be specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-bound. I think the next slide just really explains in detail about the SMART principle. Then there is the issue around the relationship between the legislation and plans and the budgets. When developing strategic plans and APPs, it is also useful to conduct a situation analysis, as I mentioned before, on the sector or spheres of resources that fall within the institution's mandate. The present delivery environment and the state of the institution itself, taking into account relevant government policies and long-term plans. Strat plans and APPs should include description of how institutions give effect to the statutory obligations, powers, and responsibilities. So, of course, this, in this regard, means the hierarchy of the different legal instruments should always be noted. And in the next slide, I sort of try to put in a pictorial view how you know, the relationships work between the legislation, the plans, and the budget. So to speak, that the MTSF framework would be the top, whereas in, for local government, it would be the IDPs. And somewhere in the middle, they meet. It's not quite clear there, but that's where it's a mechanism for government to actually check whether the government departments or local government really adheres to the their mandates, so to speak. So the threat plans are part of the process, as well as the APP, on checking whether the plans of the departments are in line with the legislation and so forth. On the next slide, we look at the relationship between the legislation, the plans, and the budget again. And it's safe to say that the Constitution is the highest law of the country and, of course, dictates to anything that happens thereafter. And, of course, after the Constitution, the departments are then required to comply with other legislation, money bills, and and if there are any specific court rulings that have significant ongoing impact on the operations of the service delivery obligations, the executive is under the obligation to give effect to these. And lastly, some departments also are subject to regulatory structures. In our case, it would be the ICASA and FTD. And of course, to say that the APPs are almost always time-bound. And as you'll notice that our MTEF period runs over 5 years, you might notice there will be overlaps in how the APPs are created, because there needs to be a transition from one threat plan to the next phase of the threat plan. And then also that the department should aim to table the annual performance plan within a month after the tabling of the budget, in respect of the year which it relates to. So there is time frames that bind the departments to submitting their APPs on time to Parliament for oversight purposes. As for the department, it has set itself three strategic goals which will be achieved when implementing its mandate. And those three strategic goals are divided into four programs of the department. The first being the administration, which has 10 sub-programs and 21 indicators. So in terms of the budget allocation for the particular program wise of administration, you'll notice that I think the slide is not quite clear, but it's the second from the left. We'll be looking at the current fund, we'll be looking at departmental management, which is the highest sense of the program one administration. Most of the budget, which is close to about 30 million, is spent on departmental management. And as you will notice that over the years, yellow being 1920, that budget is set to increase to just over 35 million for the particular program. Program two, communications policy research and development, has three sub-programs with 10 performance indicators. And safe to say that under this particular program, 6.1 million of the budget is spent on broadcasting policy. And you'll notice again that in terms of the broadcasting policy, which is the blue, for the current financial year, it's set to be 6.1, but it's set to increase to almost 9 point something by 2020 year. Although we could not really establish why the increase in this particular program per se, especially on broadcasting policy, why it would increase that much by the year 2019-2020. On program three, the program has four sub-programs with a total of 11 performance indicators. And you will see that the DTC broadcast digital migration is a flagship project of the department, and as such has been allocated 14.3 million over the current financial year. And as you'll notice, it's the red on the screen. For the current year, like I said, it's 14 million. It's set to increase to just about 20 million in 2018-19, and decrease to just above 10 million by 2019-2020. Although I think for the particular reason is that the department had set out its rollout phase, final rollout phase, for 2018-19 financial year. But as to whether they'll be able to meet that is another issue to consider, given the litigations and so forth regarding this particular process. On Program 4, which is entity oversight, it has 4 sub-programs and 15 performance indicators. And most of the budget under entity oversight is spent on communications and branding, which it's safe to say would include the BSA, Brand South Africa, and GCIS. While FTB and ICASA are the regulatory institutions, which are the fourth column, is the second highest. And the third highest is SABC and MDDA. But I think what was interesting to note in this particular slide is that obviously for the honorable members to consider the funding models for the department. Safe to say that as you will notice that the broadcasting and community media barely receives adequate funding, which is the core mandate of the department. And to make an example, in 2013, the Australian broadcaster, as a comparative analogy, gave its broadcaster close to 1.2 billion Australian dollars. I think that would be about 12 billion in our rent. So if you try and juxtapose, you can tell that there's not much funding that is allocated towards the broadcasting sub-program of the department. So in conclusion of this particular part of the presentation, we raised a couple of issues that we thought maybe the committee needs to consider. The first one being that in the event that the Constitutional Court found in favor of ETV, what are the department's plan to mitigate the implications of the ruling on the policy and the overall rollout of the migration? What is the current status of the investigation into the procurement process of the set-top boxes? I don't think the committee has actually delved too deep into the migration process, but I assume that with the forthcoming joint committee sitting, we have a much broader landscape to interrogate that question. Also, how much is needed for the full implementation of the digital migration program? I think although we do have some form of a figure, it would be quite prudent for the department to, you know, itemize the cost that they'll require to successfully implement the entire program as a flagship program of the department. And what is the status of the litigation of the SOS coalition on the broadcasting amendment bill? As the members will be aware that SOS did a presentation on this and saying that they do intend to take the department to court regarding the broadcasting amendment bill. And also, what is the department's plan in ensuring that the recommendations of the ad hoc committee on the SABC inquiry are implemented? But safe to say further that there's also the SIU report, which we also raised during our strat plan. And of course, the department will need to be seen to be showing some effort towards at least responding to the recommendations of the both reports. And the delay in the implementation of the digital migration program is impacting negatively on the availability of spectrum. And as a result, as you know, community media and the broadcast community media are impacted negatively, so to speak. So it poses a profound impact on the department's transformation agenda and the universal access to broadcasting services. The sub-program risk management must factor in how sharing of office spaces poses a significant risk to documents management. The availability or non-availability of space is a security risk, as as protecting classified information could be compromised. And I think it applies to both departments, the GCIS and the department. I think that whole issue of sharing space poses quite serious risk for the department. And the indicator of number of community radio stations provided with broadcasting infrastructure and media and MDDA mandate was put on hold pending the finalization of the audiovisual white paper. So perhaps we need to get an indication as to when this particular paper will need to be finalized. And then program performance information must adhere to the SMART principle, as I explained earlier, and that the indicators must be well defined and avoid ambiguity. And I think the AG will delve quite a lot on this particular point. I'll hand over to Nita to continue.
Meaning you can't proceed.
I can't chair.
No, can you proceed?
Okay. In terms of the GCIS, the three programs headed by the GCIS are administration, content processing and dissemination, and intergovernmental coordination and stakeholder management. Under Program 1, the purpose of it is to provide strategic leadership management support services to the department. It has 6 sub-programs under this program and 11 performance indicators. The second one, which is content processing and dissemination, there are 3 sub-programs, which are products and platforms, policy and research and communication services agency. And there's a total of 47 performance indicators under this program. And the third one, my apologies, Chair. I don't seem to find the... Oh, there it is. Okay. The third one... Yes, I think I forgot to include the slide here. My apologies. Yeah, I forgot to include the slide, so I won't delve into it. And maybe I'll just raise the issue to be considered for the committee. There's no coherent community media framework to promote the participation of all communities in the national discourse. Lack of coherent, unified government communication through all spheres of government serving all citizens. This was demonstrated by the different messages shared by government department and presidency during the SASA debacle. Lack of confidence by citizens on government, this poses a challenge for government communication. So communications need to be met with service. There needs to be some reconciliation between the communication needs as well as the service delivery. And also the falling advertising revenues obviously impact negatively on the quality of media newsrooms and media associations. I think that was the last slide, Chair. Thank you.
Was waiting for the DM. I didn't welcome you because we did last week. And if you are a new acting DG after the former acting DG. Looks like the department likes to act. development, like I was looking at GCIS as well. Okay, I don't know if is Mr. Trump here. I was looking at the notes here. Because the department is led by the minister, will allow the deputy minister to settle and talk to us in terms of the presentation, how she will handle the presentation for DOC. I think that's relevant, 15 minutes, so that you, as a leader of the team, you just give us a political overview or just start the discussion. So over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will allow the acting DG to do the presentation. But I must also say that advertisement of all the actors is out. Probably when we come back here, there will be no acting people in the department. Because we are trying to ensure that all posts are secured on a full-time basis so that we are able to move swiftly as the department. The acting DG will do the presentation and she will guide you, Chair, in terms of who is going to assist her on the presentation from her team. They must do the presentation.
Thank you very much, DM. Wanted to hear that voice. Acting DG, but also we're happy that there is this commitment that things will come to an end in terms of acting. This department has been acting all the time. Thank you very much, and over to you, Acting DG.
Good morning. Once again, thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, the Deputy Minister, colleagues. Honorable Chairperson and Members, I'll start with the introduction of the team that is with me. I have the Chief Director responsible for corporate services, who is also the custodian of this planning process. The name is Ms. Matube Tusi. And then I'm also accompanied by the
accompanied by? You're saying I'm also accompanied
by? By the Chief Financial Officer who's sitting next to me. Her name is Mrs. Tindisa Edgate. She's laughing because of I'm not used to call her Edgate lady. I call her by the same name. She's asking why am I calling her Tindisa, because she's not Tindisa, she's Edgate lady. And then the Chief Director responsible for the DDT project, Dr. Muduru, is familiar to the committee. And we do not have staff members in particular from the Office of the Minister, but we've got the staff members from the Office of the DM who will also help us in terms of following some of the matters that will be raised today. My presentation will cover the planning process that were followed in terms of I'm not sure if protocol will allow me to do so. We also accompanied by the Minister's advisor, Mr. Sandy Lenin. I thought the DM introduced this since they are in the history. We'll also present again, honorable members, on the situational analysis, which is a slide that you are familiar with, that we did with you during the strategic planning session. We'll also take you through the mandate, which has not changed, our strategic goals and objectives, the deliverables that will be implemented in the provinces, and our commitments for the 2017 to 2019-2020 commitments, and again the macro organizational structure and our staff establishment and the budget allocation. Honorable members, the department presented the threat plan on the 11th of March 2016 in line with the required frameworks, and our threat plan is ultimately informed by the National Development Plan and the MTSF, which repositions us to the national, to the outcome on nation building and social cohesion. The department also reviewed the APP to reflect the current service delivery and organizational environment, so that whatever that we plan, you know, it's actually aligned with what the environment that we are facing dictates to us. With regard to the planning process, we tabled it, the revised 2015-16 on the 11th of March last year, that is 2016. In August, we had a joint planning session with all the entities, and then in August, we submitted the draft plan to the GPME, that is a department that is responsible for planning, monitoring, and evaluation in the presidency, as well as the national treasury. We received feedback and integrated those into the planning documents. In November, we submitted the second draft, which was also shared with the GPME, the national treasury, and the office of the auditor general for assessment and input. In December, we updated the documents accordingly. And then in February, March, the final plans were submitted to the executive authority for signing off in March 2017. So this is the process that we followed in terms of finalizing the plan. With regard to the situational analysis, in December 2015, we commenced with the distribution and installation of the DTT set-top boxes and related accessories. And subsequent to that, the South African Post Office started generating statistics for registration and distribution for the qualifying households. Subsequent to that, we also did the monitoring visits in the Northern Cape to understand whether or to detect whether the devices are actually operational. And in that area, it was prioritized because it's an SK area. And we also wanted to complete or switch off that area quickly. And our monitoring visits revealed a lot of challenges, which we have since addressed. Remember, Honorable Chairperson, last week we addressed an issue of the TV license, which was mainly a challenge, but we intend as a department to regularize that matter as far as delinking the TV license, you know, to the registration process. The unavailability of smart card also has been a challenge and continues to be a challenge. And the other problem that we have was around what is it that, you know, DTT will bring as a benefit to communities, and what are the challenges that, you know, people will face post the process or the project. And then that would ultimately, that was not adequately addressed through the DTT awareness campaign. So that's what we detected from the beginning. However, with the role players in the project, most of the challenges have since been addressed. And then, as at the time that the APP was approved, over 800,000 set-top box kits have been produced by manufacturers and delivered to the SAPO warehouses. So the number as we are sitting today could have definitely changed. With regards to the consumer awareness, we looked at a better strategy that might not even cost us a lot of money, and we proactively embarked on door-to-door registration, which, you know, was fully implemented in the Northern Cape in those towns that I mentioned there. And that process has actually resulted in the uptake on registration being higher than what we were doing before, you know, looking at or embarking on the traditional methods. And then with the DTT, we've also commenced in other provinces, that is Mpumalanga, Free State, and Limpopo, although we still have got challenges as far as public awareness is concerned, and the lack of a call center still remains a huge challenge with regards to this particular project. Honorable members, remember we shared with you last week that, you know, most of the installers that are currently you know, installing the devices are based in Gauteng, and then we have since decided, you know, to train artisans and customer care consultants in all the provinces so that, you know, we ensure that in each municipality there are young people or qualified young people that will be able to assist in the installation and also as well as the public awareness, especially in the underserviced areas. With regard to the audiovisual and digital content, we shared with members last week that now we are ready. We have integrated, you know, all the inputs that we have received, you know, from the cabinet members, and it is now ready, you know, for resubmission so that, you know, we can proceed with the objective on this particular act. Although we have had a challenge that, you know, which I'll share with you later. And then in terms of this audiovisual content is that, you know, we aim to ensure that, you know, the SMEs, freelancers and other, you know, people that are capable to enter the industry do that with ease, although we still have, you know, the large industries, you know, dominating it. So it's mainly around, you know, transforming this particular area and ensuring that, you know, the other policies that have been developed around during the analog, you know, process or era now are actually aligned to the digital era which we are facing or which we are in now. I think we can. With the transformation of the media industry, based on the 2010 Indaba, we have had the colloquium which we have shared with you that that was convened by ourselves and the GCIS in terms of looking at the other areas that have, are not yet transformed in this particular area. We have since concluded it. We hope that, you know, the discussion document will now be ready and we will be able, you know, to look forward to address the issues of diversity and plurality of the media space. And again, as far as management and ownership, you know, of the media. So that discussion paper will ultimately, you know, lead us. So Honorable Chairperson, the person that is currently responsible is noting that, you know, we hope that we will be able to ensure that, you know, all citizens are part of the media, you know, community, regardless of where they stay or regardless of their economic background. With regards to community broadcasting support scheme, we also going to focus on this particular strategy so as to address the community media, because in the past the support was limited to infrastructure assistance and in later on the content production, signal distribution subsidies, and capacity building. But the challenge that we have is that we do not have a common approach as to, or a policy that guides us as to how do we support, you know, each, you know, radio station or each community TV station based on their needs or based on the environment in which you are operating. So we intend to structure, you know, the support program or the strategy based on the needs of the particular, you know, radio station or the community TV station. And again, this is also informed by the fact that, you know, as government, we have committed to have at least one community radio in every district municipality and one community TV per province. As the content advisor stated earlier, we won't be able to achieve those if we do not ultimately release, you know, spectrum, you know, to cover those particular areas. So it is very critical that, you know, we look at that and also its impact in the near future as far as our plans are concerned. The strategy will also, you know, address the problems and the future challenges identified by the stakeholders during our consultation process, so that, you know, we are able to understand what is it that, you know, a community radio station or a community TV station, what does it need, you know, when it's in the rural area, unlike the ones, you know, in the inner cities or in bigger towns or in smaller towns. So that strategy will help us, you know, to address those. Honorable Chairperson and members, now I'll move to the actual targets of our APP for the 2017-18 and the 2019-20 financial year. Our vision as a department is a vibrant and sustainable communication services for an informed citizenry and positive image of South Africa. And at the moment, it's still relevant and we do not even intend changing it. And with regards to our mission is to create an enabling environment for the provision of inclusive communication services to all South Africans in a manner that promotes socio-economic development and investment through broadcasting, new media, print media, and other new technologies, and brand the country locally, regionally, and internationally. And that has not changed, and we do not even think that we will change it in the next year, unless if there are major, you know, policy shifts that require us to do so. As well as our values, we'll still be instilling those values in terms of executing our mandate. We've set ourselves, you know, the three strategic goals. The first one is around effective and efficient strategic leadership, governance, and administration, which is mainly deals with the leadership and management of the organization. A responsive communications policy, regulatory environment, and improved country branding, and as well as transforming the communications sector. In terms of implementing this particular mandate, we'll do it through the following three strategies, that is developing and reviewing communications and broadcasting policies and legislation to promote to ensure growth and development of the sector. That will do that through the other policies that we are busy actually amending and those that we are actually going to review in the current financial year and the outer years. We're also going to improve the communication systems in order to inform and disseminate information to the public and marketing the country abroad. We are also going to strengthen the capacity of the department and our entities to effectively deliver on our mandate. We'll also broaden the participation in the communications and broadcasting sector to promote economic growth and transformation. With regards to the legislative mandate, honorable members, we have listed, you know, the legislation that we administer and those that we are accountable for. And generally, we'll always, you know, comply with the Public Service Act, the Public Finance Management Act, as well as the ITU as South Africa's signatory. in implementing, you know, the set goals, the first one on strategic leadership, governance and administration, we'll do that by fully complying, you know, with statutory requirements, again in terms of improving the capacity of our entities to deliver on our mandate and ensuring the viability and sustainability of our SOEs by 2019. And implementing the second goal, that is of a responsive communications policy, regulatory environment, and improving country branding, we'll do that by improving universal access to broadcasting services and information to all citizens, as well as marketing our country locally, regionally, and internationally, so that we promote investment. And then in implementing the goal three, that is transforming the sector, we'll support the growth and development of the creative industries. We'll also manage digital broadcasting migration and strengthening the support, guidance, and interrelations with all stakeholders by 2019. With all the work that we are doing in the department, as far as provinces are concerned, so that, you know, we are actually in line with what the Constitution requires us to do, we'll be conducting provincial consultations on the white paper on audiovisual and digital content. And we'll also conduct consultations on the media transformation and diversity policies. When you look at the presentation that we did last week, honorable members, it was stating that, you know, we are going to do five, but we have realized that, you know, probably the strategy that we have thought of, it would be effective. It might actually delay the whole process, because the five provinces were informed by the numbers. And in terms of the consultation, we cannot leave other provinces out. So we're going to be looking at the best and effective way on how, with the minimal resources that we have, we cover all the nine provinces instead of working on five provinces. So I wanted to clarify that matter. We'll still continue with the DTT awareness, which will be coordinating in all the nine provinces. And we also intend switching off in 88 borderline towns within the seven provinces that are affected. And we'll also be implementing, you know, this with all the entities that are within our portfolio. Honorable members, I'll go straight to the deliverables as they appear on our ATP. The first one is in ensuring compliance with statutory requirements. These are mainly in program one. These are compliance matters that we are required, you know, to implement the HR plan and submit our report to the DPSA, which we'll do even in the outer years, that is 18, 19, and 19 and 20. We'll also this year submit our workplace skills plan to the PCTA, and we'll also monitor that, which we'll continue to do in the 18, 19, and the 19, 20. Honorable members, as we stated last week, this is a compliance matter, but we still have got challenges in implementing those particular plans. We'll also continue, you know, to work very hard so that we maintain our clean audit status in the current financial year and in the outer years. And then we'll also prepare the financial statements in line with what is required by the Office of the Auditor General, as well as National Treasury, to keep our clean audit even in the outer years. In last year, we did not have an asset register. This year, we aim to prepare one, which we will be implementing also in the outer years. With regards to the procurement plans, which are also which is a matter that is regulated or legislated, we did not have one last year, that is the last financial year of 16-17. But however, this year we are going to prepare it, and it will be reviewed in line with the legislation. We'll also continue to do that in the outer years. With regard to risk management plan, we did not have a target for that. Although we do not have a unit and we are highly dependent on the GCIS to assist us with risk management. We will be able to develop one this year, which will be implemented in the outer years. With regard to the audit strategic plan for 2017 to 2020, we will be implementing it from this year, which will get approved, which is started last year, and will continue to do the same in the outer years. Regarding the risk-based internal audit annual operational plan, we've got one that has been approved last year, and we're going to have the same this year and in the outer years, and we'll continue to implement them in order to maintain our systems and controls, or to improve even those that are weaker, as identified by the audit committee. And then in terms of compliance, we're going to be having, you know, the reports on compliance for the entire year, and also implement that in the outer years. The audiovisual digital content act is supposed to be implemented, which is a deliverable on program two, which is communications policy research and development. With this, the white paper was supposed to be approved last year. We did not manage that, but as I said, that we are ready to go back to cabinet with a draft, as we have integrated all the inputs from the relevant departments, and we'll work hard to ensure that that white paper is approved, and we'll also work on the bill in the 17-18 financial year, and we'll, in 18-19, we'll ensure that, you know, the bill is submitted to Parliament, and then it will be enacted in the 19-20 financial year. With regards to the broadcasting strategy, we got it approved last year in 2016-17, and then we will continue to have two monitoring reports per year to look at the broadcasting infrastructure and signal distribution in the first year, and we'll look at the other, you know, aspects in the outer years. Regarding the regulatory policy framework of the National Public Broadcasting Service Corporation, which was supposed to be approved, we did not have a target in the 2016-17 year. This is aimed as providing or improving universal access. That is, we aim in this financial year, you know, to develop a concept paper which will be approved by the minister, and then in the 18-19 year financial year we'll have the position paper that will be submitted to cabinet for approval, and then in 19-20 we'll have the national policy framework on the National Broadcasting Service Corporation developed. That is what we plan to do, and we hope that, you know, we'll be able to achieve that this year, given that, you know, we still have got other bills that are pending. And we, as the Deputy Minister committed, that as soon as we have more positions filled, I think we'll be able to do most of the work. With regard to the media transformation and diversity policy implemented, this is what, you know, I spoke to earlier, that, you know, we'll have the position paper submitted to the minister, and then we'll have the policy approved in 1890, and we'll implement that policy in the year 2019-20. Regarding the broadcast production advisory body, we have last year we had two reports that had to be done by this advisory body. We'll continue to do the work, but in the 17-18 financial year, in their program of action, we'll have to be get them focusing on the broadcasting skills and the funding, you know, for broadcasting content, and then we'll also plan for the two reports on other areas that is part of their work that they're supposed to do as legislated in 2018 and 2019, and also in the 19 and 20 financial year. With regard to the industry and capacity development, which mainly is around, you know, the DTT program, In the 16-17 financial year, we planned to switch off in the SK areas, which we have since approved, which we have since achieved. And then for the current financial year, we intend to, or we plan to switch off in the 88 borderline towns within the 7 provinces. And then for 18-19, we'll switch off in the other borderline or remaining provinces and the inland provinces, and finalize that in the 19-20 financial year. We hope and pray that, you know, with regards to the challenges that we have, we will be able to address some of them in order to achieve those. With the number of the awareness campaigns, we'll continue to do that through Izimbizo. For the 16-17 year, we plan to have 10, and we have even exceeded that number, and we plan to have the same the Imbizo for the 17-18 and also in the outer years. But however, if we get more budget, probably that number will ultimately exceed. But we are also looking at other alternative ways in terms of addressing the awareness campaigns. In line, we'll be consulting in the main with provinces and also with other line departments. With regards to the number of reports showing consumer access to digital broadcasting, in particular those with government subsidized boxes, we planned to have 4 quarterly reports showing consumer access to digital broadcasting. This was mainly done in the SK area and the other provinces, and to date we haven't had challenges as to the kind of boxes that we have or in terms of connections. Everything else is still well. We'll plan again to do that in the 17-18 as we connect, you know, the borderline areas, and in 18-19 and also in the outer year of 19-20 financial year. In doing our work, honorable members, we also consult various stakeholders, and this is mainly done by our intergovernmental relations and international relations. With regards to the stakeholder engagement, we planned to coordinate 10 stakeholder sessions in 2016, which we have done, and we plan to do the same this current financial year and in the outer years. And mainly in here is ultimately linked to the work that we do in DTT, and again the work that we do in terms of the audiovisual policy and the other policies and programs that we implement, you know, with the relevant stakeholders. We also plan in this financial year to table 2 papers in the as far as multilateral engagements are concerned. That is with WIPO, which is mainly related, you know, to content piracy. And again, in 2019, we'll be tabling a paper on the World Radio Communication Conference, and this is mainly around spectrum matters. We also plan to present 2 papers in the outer years. The last program is on entity oversight, which is mainly around the work that is done by the entities reporting to the department. We plan to have the shareholder compact and accountability instrument signed. Last year, we planned to have 1 shareholder compact and 4 accountability instruments. Those were ultimately signed, but we only have 3 as ICASA did not sign. But we have since addressed those issues that if they do not sign accountability instruments, which are general because of their independence as a regulator, will ultimately this year enforce the performance agreement, which will be signed with the chairperson of the council and the councillors this year, and will continue to develop and finalize the accountability instrument with the other entities and the shareholder compact with the SABC. This we have since done, you know, and they are actually, they have been submitted, you know, to the ministry, and will implement that also in the outer year. Again, in the wake of entity and oversight, we've got a policy on how we manage, you know, the performance and the compliance of the entities will facilitate, you know, the continue to facilitate the implementation of that particular policy over the years, and we'll do that in line with what, you know, the committee or the minister or legislation will ultimately, you know, dictate to us on the matters that need to be monitored or the matters that need to be enforced. Will also continue, you know, to support them through the transfers, but will ultimately again ensure that, you know, those transfers are aligned or they are done in line with the conditions that they are supposed to comply with. And then with regards to the reports on the work that is done by entities, we obtain quarterly reports, you know, from the entities, and we'll continue to do the same, you know, throughout, you know, the year. Last year we did not have this particular target that relates to the oversight annual reports that are submitted to the minister, but for the 17-18 financial year, we plan to have each entity, you know, submitting the annual report, you know, to the minister, and we'll continue to do the same in the outer years. And with regards to the work of the entities aligned to the department, last year we planned 2016, in the 2016 financial year, we planned to have 10, but now we have reduced them to 2 so that, you know, they do have yearly reports that we can easily maintain or we can easily even monitor in terms of the deliverables and not processes. So we'll continue to do that over the years. And then we'll again have reports on all the forums or the fora that, you know, all the entities meet with the department as far as the work is concerned. Last year we were requesting 4, but we have brought them, you know, to 2 as far as compliance and matters that have been agreed upon are concerned. With regards to the macro structure, we haven't changed it a little bit, but just to share with the committee that with regards to the entities as they stand, the minister has delegated the deputy minister fully the responsibility of the MDDA, the FPB, Branded A Local, and they will continue to do the work together on you know, DTT and other cabinet committees and inter-ministerial committees. I'm saying this so that, you know, we all understand what is the responsibility of the deputy minister, and we'll appreciate it if honorable chairperson, that issue of communications is resolved, you know, as soon as possible, because of, as we said, she's always the last person to receive what is required of those entities instead of being the first one that ultimately, you know, receives that particular information. As the Deputy Minister has stated, I'm acting, and we have since advertised the positions that we have budgeted for. From the branches, it's only 2 branches that, you know, have got funding. The first one on communications, policy, research, and development that has been advertised and will be filled very soon. Industrial capacity development, we don't have funding for it. And then the entity oversight is currently funded. With regards to the staff establishment as at 31 March 2017, the department, honorable members, has got 374 positions in our establishment, but only 90, you know, are actually funded. And of the 90 that are funded, only 76 are filled, and the remaining budget is currently funding the DTT employment contract. So that table shows you how many positions we have, you know, per level, and those that, you know, are currently funded, and those that are additional to the establishment. and those that are currently even on contract. So this is how we look at the moment. But you know, when you look at, you know, the 374 against, you know, 76 positions, that is a very serious challenge as far as delivery is concerned. But this is mainly now being looked at as not a problem because of we're still highly reliant on the GCIS to provide, you know, support services. With regards to the budget allocation, honorable members, for the 17-18 financial year, we've got, you know, 1.4 billion, and of that 1.4 billion, it has not changed. If we actually give everyone what their share is, we are only left with 100 million as a department. And now I will ask, you know, the CFO to take you through what this budget means.
Honorable Chair, honorable members, honorable Deputy Minister, the financial plan to support our plan for the financial year 17-18 and the NCAP. For 17-18, our total budget is 1.4 billion. For 18-19, it's 1.5 billion.
Can I use the mic, please?
For 17-18, we have 1.4 billion. For 2018-19, we have 1.5 billion. For 19-20, it's 1.6 billion. And if we look at the budget here in terms of the program, program one, we have seen when the researcher was analyzing, that's where your departmental management and everybody says, sitting with 62 million. Maybe let's explain that skewed position that you see, because when the department started, there was only funding for the ministry office that was given by treasurer. So you will find that most of the staff in that area, they belong to the ministry and the other administration people. Your core department, core branches, this program is receiving 8.5 million. And your DTT is moving from 41 million that we have in the current financial year to 22 million. You can see the imbalance that we are experiencing in terms of the non-flexibility of the budget. And the program four is 1.3 billion. In this program four, share is your SABC, it's your ICASA, it's your GCIS, MDDA, and SPG, all the entities within the department together with GCIS. We felt it's crucial that the members must know what is our total budget when we take out the transfers out, because they tend to misrepresent the actual budget for the department. The total budget for the department for 17-18 is only 100 of which 62 goes to program 1, 8.5 to program 2, 8.22.2 to program 3, and only 6.7 to entity overtime. The economic classification, we can see that 95% of our budget has gone to transfers and subsidies. Of the remaining amount, of the 100 million that we have, 76 million goes to compensation of employees. We are only left with 23 million for goods and services. For payment of capital assets, because it's to the nearest 100, it's zero because our budget is only 41,000. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Captain Peter, and CFO. were supposed to break for tea. But I don't see tea. But I was waiting for... the word. Can we start engaging from that for a few minutes? And then if you can switch off your phone. Bo? Your phone is making noise. I can't say members. I must get a target. Members, can you raise your issues? No, Bo, I must get a soft target. So yeah, a soft target. Honorable Teddy, break the ice. I know there is no ice in the bomb, but break it.
Let me appreciate the two presentations. One on the analysis and the other one on the PP of the department. Two issues that are I would like to be clarified on from the analysis. There was one slide, I think it was the very last slide, where you spoke about the very last one, where you were talking about issues to consider. To be considered by the department. I became concerned when I saw something that says lack of confidence by citizens. Can you go to the slide?
Our own slide, committee slide.
No, on the analysis.
Yeah, that's the committee.
Huh?
Analysis of the committee.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think. Lack of confidence by citizens on government, which poses a challenge for government communication. What do you mean? I want you to expand on that one. Because surely there should be a tool that assists you to arrive at that particular conclusion. Because we are not talking about a perception. That is. That is the second last one. You are not talking about a perception. The way you have captured it is lack of confidence. So you are saying citizens don't have confidence on government, and that poses a challenge for government communication. I want you to expand on that. So that we must not live here with a statement that is very confusing. So, because as I've indicated, you are not saying that it's a perception. So I want you to expand and then tell us how do you arrive at that particular conclusion. The last one, I would have appreciated from your presentation an analysis which talks about how the department and the entities utilize the funds that are allocated to them. Because more often we talk about, well, more often people complain about money not being enough, but ultimately in terms of utilizing the money that has been given to us, we don't do well, resulting in some instances money going back to treasury. We don't have that. I'll appreciate if you can just give us an analysis from your side as the content advisor. What's your take? Are we doing well, especially from the side of the entities, in terms of the money that we give them? Are they utilizing this money? So I'll appreciate it from your side, not from the department, when you analyze how they are utilizing the funds that are allocated to them. What's your take? So let me go straight to the presentation by the department. Shareholder compacts and the accountability instruments. We have got a responsibility to conduct oversight over the department and the entities. But these shareholder compacts and the so-called accountability instruments are not provided to us. How do we conduct oversight over these entities? It's a bit of a challenge. I'm saying from now henceforth we'll appreciate the situation where in which we know exactly what is it that you have agreed upon with the entities in terms of what is it that they are going to do by when. Ourselves, we must know, so that as we do conduct oversight, we must know whether they are performing in line with what they said they will do. So all I'm saying is that we need to be provided as the oversight body with the compacts and the accountability instrument that you spoke about. The second last one is consequence management as it relates to the entities. If an entity says by the end of the quarter, this is what we would have done, or by the end of the financial year, this is what we would have done. If that does not happen, what do you do? Or in this instance, because we are preparing for the new financial year, we are just approving the annual performance plan. What are you going to do? In simple terms, I'm saying from the shareholder compacts that you are going to be signing with them, if those things that they said they are going to do do not happen, what do you do? Or what is it that you are going to do? We must know it as the portfolio committee. The challenge of funding that we have always been talking about, I think, Chairperson, you'll remember there's been a session that we suggested that some time back that we need to meet with the National Treasurer to try and address this particular challenge. I think it's an issue that we'll have to pursue that particular proposal to deal specifically with the issue of the issue of underfunding or lack of funds in the department and the entities, which results in them not being able to perform some of the things that they're supposed to do. There was a slide while you were talking about vacancies and who is in the department. And I became interested in somewhere where you talk about unfunded posts. And I will need clarity on that one. What do you mean? Is it the post that is approved and there is no money that has been allocated for the book? Can you expand on that? I don't remember what slide it says. Yeah, but somewhere it says unfunded post. So I'll appreciate if they can expand. What do you mean when you say a post is unfunded? Is it approved and there is no money? So I'll appreciate if they can just assist us to understand that particular area. The second last one, Chair, is on the targets that were set for ourselves for the switch off for DTT. I've seen somewhere saying you have set some targets by when, but realizing that we have missed some deadlines in the past, this time around, how sure are we that this time around we will then be able to do, meet those deadlines that were those targets that we are setting for ourselves? From time to time, departments and the entities come to us. I think it's an issue that we raised last week at the strategic planning session, that when you come to appear before the committee, there are issues that we raise. And when those entities come back here, nothing is said about the issues that we have raised in the past. It's like we're just raising issues for compliance sake, which can't be right. The reason why we raise issues like what we're going to be doing today is because we want these things to be attended to. We want these issues to be attended to. We have made a recommendation, and I'm happy Deputy Minister is here, that as you come back, we'll appreciate if we know in terms of the issues that we have raised in the past, progress that has been made with regard to these issues. And if there are difficulties in attending to some of these issues, where are these difficulties? So all I'm saying is that it should be a standard practice that every time entities come here, tell us in our past engagements, these are the issues that the portfolio committee raised. This is how far we have gone, and these are the difficulties that we're coming across, and these are the interventions that we want to employ to attend to those difficulties. Thank you.
Yeah. I will assess as to how many questions one asks.
No,
you're right, no problem. So that it moving forward, I want the department to respond to your questions, because there are many and they are okay. Don't think that they are not okay. Because we must do everything. Yeah, no, we must do everything. The only thing that next time when you ask questions, assist us in terms of the slide.
Hey, I was thinking.
There are general questions where they can just answer. But for us to follow you, just to say slide so and so, it will help. I know they can answer even if you don't point them to your slide. DOC, can you attend to those questions?
Thank you, Honorable.
Just for protocol, when I say DOC, I go via the Deputy Minister. I know she can but delegate. So when I say DOC, DM, I'm talking to you, I'm talking to them through you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, before I give the acting DG to respond on the questions raised by honorable members, it's difficult to be on this other side of the table. I must get used to it. Chair, the oversight on the entities, it will depend on the ministry, which is both myself, the minister, and the deputy, as a deputy. Because remember, the delegations on entities, some the minister gave them to me, and she is doing oversight on the ones she took responsibility of. Now, your question is directed to us, meaning that we must finish the committee with how are we going to move about in terms of doing oversight and accountability and the instruments that we are going to use. Now, in terms of my entities, I have met with some, because that's the first point of departure you do when you arrive at a new institution. Then we are going to develop some terms of reference in terms of the oversight and accountability and the monitoring of those entities. Then we'll finish the committee with those terms of references. I'm not going to go deep the entities which are delegated to me by the minister. Then I will share through you
give the DG to respond in some of the questions.
And if I forget, at some stage, there are people we don't know from your office,
yeah,
and maybe from the minister's office, at some stage, not now,
yeah,
just to introduce the DG.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I would like now to respond to the questions, and my colleagues will add, you know, some of the questions that have been asked by Honorable Zedi. From where I'm sitting, I don't think there is a challenge in us, you know, sharing the accountability instruments. I think that will also strengthen, you know, the entity oversight, you know, on this particular matters, because of, as Deputy Minister has stated, at times as officials we want to ultimately, you know, contribute towards the agenda during the bilateral meetings. But it's up to, you know, the minister, you know, and the chairperson to agree on what goes into the final agenda. So now that we are also required to report back here, I think that will ultimately, you know, strengthen our case to get them, you know, account during the bilateral meetings or during those forums that we have. So as soon as the minister signs them with the entities, we will provide the committee with copies. I think those also goes with the consequence management that, you know, at times is when the CFOs, you know, meet. Again, part of the challenge that, you know, we have is when there is no compliance. But now if, you know, this information comes through the committee, it will ultimately, you know, help us that, you know, they have to account, you know, to the minister and the deputy minister, and again, entity oversight will ultimately have to record and ensure that, you know, we manage those issues as far as that is concerned. Because the challenge, as the deputy minister says, at times something when it goes wrong, we are told that we don't report to you, we are reporting to the minister, you know. So I think that will ultimately help us in terms of those particular matters. And then with regards to the issues raised with the entities that are not addressed, we'll try to find a mechanism, because now we have started with the department, you know, to record all the matters, including those of last week, you know, to have sort of a dashboard that tells us these are the issues that have been raised, and then we'll make sure that, you know, they are responded to before the next appearance or within, you know, 14 days if, you know, they are matters of the entity. So the Chief Director of Corporate Services that is responsible for planning, if the Secretary can also assist us in sharing, you know, that particular information. We've started now developing a dashboard that tells us that these are the matters that have been raised and they need to be addressed. So it will be easier for us, you know, to follow up, you know, with the entities, and we report accordingly. And then the other matter that Honorable Zedi raised is the vacant position. You know, it's a very interesting matter, because you submit the structure, they approve those positions, and then you find that when you allocate funds, there are no funds that are available, but the position is approved, but there's no money allocated to it. But I'll ask the Chief Director responsible for corporate services, you know, to talk to that slide and explain fully. Is that the position, yes, of a DG is approved, it's in the structure, it needs to be there. But if there's no money that you have allocated to it, because of when we report to the DPSA, we report on the positions that are being funded. So you can't fill it, even if it's approved, but if you don't have money, you know, you cannot ultimately, you know, fill that particular post. So it's around the money that is being allocated, and I think she'll expand further to, you know, explain this particular, you know, table that is in front of us. With regards to the with the deadline in, as far as switching off on DTT is concerned, well, we have since raised it with the minister and the deputy minister, the risks that we are faced with, and we hope that, you know, sooner or later they will be engaging with the with USASA, who is an implementing agent on those particular cases that we have. But as we stated last week when we reported, we have since looking at some of the matters, because there are matters of contract management. There are matters related to, you know, the procurement processes. At technical level, we have engaged with the National Treasury, and they are prepared ultimately, you know, to mediate on the matter for us and the USASA and the DTPS DG, which we were supposed to have a meeting this week to find an amicable way to resolve some of those issues. And if those issues can be resolved outside the court process, then we might not have challenges except that of funding. And if funding is addressed, I don't think we've got major critical matters ahead of us in terms of switching off. But with these two issues, you know, around funding and the pending court cases, especially those ones that we preempt on the aggrieved service providers that are currently appointed by USASA, if those are not resolved, they remain a high risk in terms of us switching off in 2018. I'll ask my colleagues, the Chief Director of Corporate Services and the Chief Director of Broadcasting Digital Migration, to add on what we have already explained.
Thank you, PG. Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Honorable Deputy Minister, Honorable Ted, you are correct about the posts that have been approved on the structure. The structure is consulted with the Minister of DPSA, and after she has agreed to the structure, the Minister approves it, but the funding never came. So out of those numbers that you have there, the 374 posts that were approved, we could only, and the funding of those 90 posts, as the acting DG has said, the funding only came for the funding of the post in the ministry. And the other posts, it was the money that came from GCIS. So that's how, and the other number is from the people who were transferred from the old DOC who came with the functions when the new DOC was established. So that number, that off-funded post, it comes from that. And on top of that, as you can see, we only managed to fill 76 posts. And out of those 90 posts, we can only fill the DG, the DDG posts. And then we cannot fill the other posts, as we have said there, that we are funding. We are using that money that we're saving from the vacancies to fund the contracts that are in the DTT, because the DTT was handed over without any or much human resources. So it is true, they are approved on the structure, but they are not funded.
Are you done? Are you covered?
No, Mbao must deal with lack of confidence. That one, I must address.
Content advisor?
No, through you, Chair.
Okay.
The Chief Director for the DTT.
Oh, okay.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, and our Honorable Deputy Minister. I want to start by giving a context, because this seems to be a complex matter, Chairperson. The migration from analog to digital is consumer driven, And for us to achieve an objective, one, to connect 5 million people that government has committed, and two, to connect the those who do not who will be relying on retail market, requires an extensive and focused consumer public awareness and consumer support. As we have reported last week, there is a need for projects fails because of three key reasons. One, if we have lack of leadership support, which we have been having since we started with this program, and I believe we continue to receive that support. The second issue is the lack of resources, which we do not have funding to do anything. If the DG will tell you, personally, I've always been fighting with them because I have never taken any leave. I have to be focusing on the outcomes and the key deliverables. The third issue is the issue of serving the processes instead of serving the outcomes. So what we have done in the from the onset is to divide the program in three phases. The first phase was to look at the SKA. We have set a target of last year, we switched off the analog transmitters without funding. That is why we therefore resorted into the door-to-door campaigns and begging, sitting in the door of the minister, please, we need support by ensuring that we have those Ezimbizo campaigns, because if, when a political figure stands up in front of people about a particular program, they listen to. The second issue that the second phase that we are now focusing on, which our minister and the deputy minister will be supporting us, is on the second phase, which is the borderline areas. We have identified those areas. We have developed a plan which is in place, but without funding, we cannot run those campaigns. We have demonstrated, Chairperson, in January when we received the money during the adjustment budget, that when funding is available, we can make an impact. By the close of December, we had 52,000 registrations. Since we got the money late February, late January, early February, we have recorded 160,000 registrations, because we had money, we could be able to move with the plan that we had. Where we are sitting now, there's a lot of forms sitting in the post office because we raised awareness campaigns, we have registered people. They are now sitting with the piles trying to connect people, to try to capture those forms in the post office. So what we're saying is, without funding, it will be difficult for us to meet those deadlines, those timelines. But where we are sitting, from how we have planned and the approaches and strategies we have, we believe with the leadership of the deputy minister and the minister, we can achieve those. But what we are calling for and appealing to the committee and the government of the country is to have funding for this program. I cited maybe just to give a reflection on this. Tanzania, when they were in the process of migration, they've spent about 607 million rand. And Tanzania television penetration was very low. Unlike South Africa, where we have to switch off 183 transmitters, and on digital platform, on terrestrial platform, in Tanzania they had very low penetration of DPT. Now in South Africa we have two challenges. The first challenge is we have to migrate those who rely on government, the 5 million that we have committed to provide as government. The second one is to entice those who are relying on the retail market. This requires a lot and a focused awareness campaign to the public to say we need to switch off. The challenge we have, we cannot go and advise the deputy minister and the minister that declare 2018 December as a switch off date when we don't have funding. Are we going to go for a hard switch off where everybody in South Africa will not have access to television services? So those are the challenges. We need funding for us to migrate from analog to digital platform. We have a very small team which is committed, and we believe once we have funding, we'll be able to also capacitate the program office to have resources to deliver the program. I thank you. All right. DM and then Sister Ivala.
Chesh, on this issue of the DTT and the deadline, whether we are going to meet it or not, the issue of funding is not the only challenge. I think that the DG or the chief director of DTT must also appraise the committee on the fact that USASA has cancelled the contracts of the manufacturers, and there's litigations in the process that alone can cause the delays in terms of meeting the deadlines. Now, I thought that they are going to raise that so that you are also empowered in terms of information on this particular question of the deadline. So if the chair can just allow them to give you information on that, it would be proper. Okay.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Deputy Minister. As when this project started, USASA appointed around 27, you know, service providers. And then in the process is that with the manufacturers, they only appointed three. And the three that have been appointed, there were SCM irregularities, that is supply chain management irregularities, and the issues of collusion, which was brought to the attention of the department. And then the then acting DG of the department commissioned an investigation through the National Treasury, which has been done. But, you know, it ended up at a level whereby, you know, there were some of the findings that were inconclusive. And then at the time that, you know, the investigation report was brought to the attention of USASA, nothing has been done. The business continued as normal. And then last year we received a letter that states that they want to deal with the issues that have been raised in the investigation report. And then they further requested the AG to look at the matters that were ultimately been found by the Chief Procurement Officer in National Treasury. Most of the issues have been confirmed, and they are now agreeing to the findings that, you know, there were irregularities. The challenge that we have now is that they have just unilaterally, you know, cancelled the contracts of the service providers. And the service providers, in turn, they have filed issues of foreign exchange as some of the grievances with some of them with the National Treasury. And then the one service provider that has been allocated to provide the DTH boxes, that is the digital to home boxes, now they've also cancelled that particular contract. And they've suspended, you know, the contract also of the service providers that do the installations or the installers. So now with this cancellation and with the switch off date, really poses a very difficult challenge, you know, to us in terms of concluding the project. But on the other hand is that the main thing that is worrying us is not only about the money that will be involved in mitigating or in this litigation process, but we are also concerned about the fact that when they cancel this contract, you know, it's going to also take time, you know, to deal with the appointment, and it means that obviously we might even miss the deadline. Worse off, we are also fearing of the fact that some of them might ultimately sue for damage because of the got stock that is available, but they cannot issue that stock to anyone. So we've got service providers that are sitting with the, if I may call it, with the cost of production and the output in their factories, and their contracts have been cancelled. So it means that if their contracts have been cancelled, they will ultimately not have be able to pay for the cost of production. Some of them even import the parts, you know, production, and then the cost that goes with maintaining, you know, those plants. So that is the challenge that we have. And then USASA's argument is that they are doing everything because of the AG says those are irregular and they've got their council advising them that is irregular. So what we have since advised the minister is to get all the documents that ultimately led to USASA at this particular stage cancelling the contract, because of the minister cannot say anything around it, because of you don't even know what is it that, you know, the management letter from the AG says, number one. And number two, under normal circumstances, because of there is a memorandum of understanding signed between our minister and the minister of DTPS, is that they have not even met and find an amicable solution in terms of resolving this problem. But USASA has ultimately cancelled those. So like any other businessman, USASA believes that they are on the right, but on our side is that when you look at the number, technically so, although from the manufacturing of set-top boxes, it was only allocated to three companies, but you don't know what is the plan of the other 24, because of they've been appointed, and then now they've not received even a single order to place, you know, to be placed. So we don't know what is it, what strategy that they're going to do. But we know for a fact that, you know, anyone, you know, targets government like that, the minute you move, they might interdict the process, they might sue for damages. So that, in essence, the deputy minister is correct. We might be facing with a lot of, you know, challenges. Hence, we at technical level requested them to intervene and the national treasury to look at the most possible way in terms of addressing this issue.
Yeah. Yeah, just for me, before coming to other questions.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I really want to thank the Deputy Minister for what is important issue to the attention of the people. Thank you very much. I'm sure you were sitting there, your official did not bring this part. And I'm very worried why. But also, Chair, I want to hear from those people. It's like this thing may happen. How she responds, it may happen. I mean, the Prime Minister has just assured us that it has happened. So the those people must tell us what are the implications and how are they going to deal with that. It should not be a situation like this might happen, this might happen. You suffer, the minister is saying, it has cancelled. So, we can't create an impression that we do. That thing is still to come. It is before us. The DOC must give us maybe within 7 days. What are the implications? Because surely, if you are sitting in stock, with stock in your factory waiting for the process to unfold, and in the middle of the process of things, the issue is in fact terminated. A normal South African will have to go to court. That's very normal. So I really want to put my thing at check on the fact that the department must bring us a report on what the implications are and how the department is going to deal with those. And for me, Chair, I'm happy that the Deputy Minister also confirmed the fact that there's going to be, in a very short space of time, an appointment of full-time people in strategic position, because we are sitting with a situation where people who are acting and taking decisions And at the end, no one is accountable. This, we asked this question sometime last year, and SNDG were assured that there will be consequential punishment. And I don't hear that. Moving away from this one, Chair, as we, last week we got to listen to the department raising these issues, very important. But I also want to add that a meeting between us and Treasury is important and it has been agreed on, but also the meeting between ourselves and the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation. I'm not sure whether it's fair, with all its sins and weaknesses, for the DOC to struggle like it is doing, as if they established themselves. They are a department that was strategically established. Now it's like they are at home, they have to split their budget like the mother at home that does not earn anything but waiting for the grant on the first of each month and having to really take this little to this and that and that. Yes, they do that, and in majority of cases they do it so in a very, very professional way. However, I think the monitoring and evaluation department must come and address to say how are they assisting this department to be able to realize its mandate as according to the President of the Republic, that in fact gave instruction that this department must be established. Already once we mitigate and talk to Treasury, in case there is no point for this department, let's hear from the monitoring and evaluation, because we are now, it was 2014, we are 2017. They, by this time, they are supposed to have been able to put into context what needs to be done. Because I know with Treasury, sometimes they play games with each other. But if monitoring and evaluation can come in because they assisted in the President's office, therefore they have a responsibility to oversee everybody. And they must then, in this case, assist this department so that the Treasurer can come in with all the advices from us as well as from the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation to see the importance of further funding this department. Because I see from the report the actual mandate of the department is not funded. So why should this department exist?
Yeah.
The actual mandate is not funded. You can't sit here as a department and distribute money to this entity and that one. At the time you are supposed to be a department and run your program, you run it with 10 cents. What are you going to achieve? And surely, because we're working in an environment that is like it is, sometimes patriarchy plays a role. These entities might be a little bit naughty in not wanting to really account to the department. But I want to say to the department that will never be accepted as an excuse. Because our, your arrangement between the entities and yourself is not a booty-booty or sissy kind of a relationship. It's a relationship that is very legal and it must be respected as such. I remember last week when DG, the one of your entities, was trying to be smart and so on and so on. I think that is not going to be accepted. We must just tell you in your faces that the entities must be managed in a manner that it's all accepted insofar as the laws that govern that arrangement. So that no one might come up and think that he or she is doing a favor to anyone. People must understand their role and they must respect their role. It has been very good because the entities have been performing very good insofar as the agency report and so on. The only entity has always been SABC, of which now we think with the new board you are coming up to be really again coming on board to be one of those entities that is going to perform. However, I think I want to emphasize that, Chair, there should be no excuse insofar as the monitoring of the entities and making sure that they perform accordingly. In your slides, Chair, in slide 7, just want to note, under the audiovisual and digital content, bulletin 2, what is your plan? I hear you're saying the trend is relevant, national image and small medium and micro.
Mark,
oh.
When you're not dealing with parts,
because I'm coming to you after Honorable Kumbel, but I think let's tie up this because you had proposals, Honorable Kumbel, on this one. And I think it's correct that we urgently have a joint meeting with the telecoms, because it impacts on both our work as the two committees. I think let's subtract that meeting and have the leadership of these departments, both of them, POC and DTPS, so that we can quickly deal with this matter. I'll propose that we support this idea, but fast track it to meet as the two committees agreed, and then work out as to what we're going to do. Thank you, members. Thank TM for raising this issue. Can you go back to the slide, to the presentation, after this matter? Honorable Kumbel, and then will be followed by this. You still have the issue on the GCIS?
No, on.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know that issue is from GCIS presentation.
Oh,
the issue that you are raising is from GCIS presentation when we met them.
Okay.
It's them saying that.
Okay.
What is reflected there is from GCIS. I hope, Donald, when we deal with your presentation, we'll have to deal with this question as well. Allow me to say Mr. Donald, not Trump anymore.
But
so it was, yes.
The second one was on the utilization of the funds. You remember? I think he captured it correctly. I would like to know from his analysis, is he able to share with us? How are they utilizing the money that is being given to them?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Perhaps the researcher can also assist in this. But I think that given the context, it's almost with the capacity that we have within the committee, it's almost impossible to be able to sit down and check whether the funds have met their particular target, except based on the information that we receive from the department. But we do take note of that, and perhaps in the future analysis we'll be able to at least give you a background on at least two financial years so that we can have a comparison of whether the money allocated is actually spent on the actual time. But usually the departments also present quite extensively. Thank you, Chair.
Are you now covered?
Yeah.
Okay. Honorable Kumbel. Can you push this one? Yes, sir. This one.
The corner lane.
So that, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You see, I think the problem probably could be, it's just reminded me of one moment where we were summoned by the first president of the Democratic South Africa. When we complained about Goldstone, the Gauteng was overwhelmed by violence. So there's a man we didn't like called Richard Goldstone. And the former president summoned us to explain why don't we want Goldstone. We spoke for 6 hours, all of us, but he closed that meeting in 10 minutes. By asking us one question: is there an evidence that we put before Goldstone which he ignored? None of us could answer that question. And he rejected our proposal. The meeting was closed. Because all what he wanted was if we accuse Goldstone, what evidence did we put to her, which he ignored, then we could not succeed. The point I'm taking here is that we may complain about budgets, about anything, shortage of money. The biggest question is, what is the shortage of money to do what? That's a painful question that we must answer. I'm slightly critical even about our own analysis. You see, the mandate is nicely articulated, acting initially. It says, informed citizenry, branding the country. So that everything branches from there, whatever it is. Whether it's migration, transformation, all those things, audiovisual content, your advisory report, all of these things emanate from there. But what we're interested in, I thought that's what we're supposed to be interested in here, since the department was established in 2014, is, for instance, if you speak about active citizens, naturally, it means the capacitation of that activity, the interventions that enhance that activity of the citizenry are articulated in the document somewhere. And to us, what is interested in, we should be, I suspect we're supposed to be interested in, is the multilingual accommodation in the process. Accommodation of diverse perspectives in society. We're not a uni perspective communication, so that the broader society can feel that sort of perspective, be they sectoral, whatever, there's an attempt to sort of, among other things, optimal geographic coverage. Now, I suspect that's what we're interested in. Because when you go to society, they're not interested in all these things that are written here. Your HR plan, your internal audit plan, and you can list all these things that are written here. We as politicians, we're going to go to society and say, well, the internal audit plan is finished, the HR plan is in place. Because society, for our purpose, is not interested in that. They're interested in, can I listen to the radio through my language? Is my language catered for in the radio? I'm in the Northern Cape, in Upington. Is this infrastructure helping us to also have access? There's a perspective that is being isolated in the broader society and so on. These are the things you're going to be interacting when you meet society. Well, if you talk about internal audit to them, they will not listen to you. They will wait until you finish and they ask you these things which are affecting them. And all the elements and so on. When it comes to the economy, if you talk about branding the country, The interest is that if we said to the community, branding is for economic purposes, they will say, we don't have jobs. How is your branding assisting? How many investments are we getting and all those kind of things? How many tourists and so on? So I'm just listing the issues of things that we interact with as we deal with society. My worry is that the bigger part of the report, Sandeep, deals with the internal life of the department. Deals with the internal life of the department. And we stand the risk chair of doing work of chief directors, HODs, when we are a political oversight. I think the challenge we have is that we must, at some point, decide what is it that we want to hear from the department as a political committee. Because we stand at risk here of even going to Parliament, report on the HR plan, how many workers were recruited, and so on. those issues in the crew management side are internal capacity issues that help the department to report to us progress with regard to plurality, media diversity, and so on. Those things are your issues, are not our issues. They're not our issues. Because you might find that we'll spend days and years discussing. Actually, that finds reflection in your... I'll go through quickly on some of these issues. What is that? If you go through... Your document speaks about something called situational extinguishers and DM. Your document speaks about something called situational analysis. I think, sir, when you say situational analysis, even our college advisor must say to us, what is a relevant situation for our people in the community? Is it what is contained here? That's a major question you must ask. When you say you are doing situational analysis to us, let me just give you two examples, or one example. I usually say a strategy has got three pillars. One is the reason why it is formulated, the problem situation. Two is the end point where you want to reach. And three is the road that connects you between the two. And if I want to find you, I must be convinced that the problems you're analyzing are the problems I can identify with. Which, in the preface by the minister, are well articulated what the challenges are, right? So that problem is a problem that we identify with. Then your end point becomes very key then. And then we engage with you on how you work there. That's why your KPIs and all these other things come in. These are three issues. Now, that's why I'm saying to our colleague advisor, maybe the question you must ask is that people say, if you go to situational analysis, you think about digital migration. We conducted monitoring visits. What has got that to do with this comment? I thought it would be so difficult on this matter. What has got that to do with our purpose here? You conducted monitoring. What do we do about that? So the evaluator will say, so what? Connected with it, so what? And then you say, over internet experience keys have been produced by the manufacturers, and so what? You can go on and ask this question. You go to the content, you say, globally, the audiovisual market structure will be dominated by large vertical integration. This market structure allows large companies, you are doing serious analysis. But, and so what? So the point I'm making is that, I suspect, Chair, when we do situational analysis, we want to tell us about the state of these ultimate outcomes. As we speak now, where are they? Since 2014, when the department was formed. Where is the plurality? Where is this multilingual? All these things, because these are the things we're going to report about as politicians in the community. So your multilingualism is accommodated, 10%, 40% improvement. Why 40% accommodation, inclusion, of all these things that are written here in the preface by the minister. We have been able, for instance, at a particular point in time in 2014, when we established a department, this was the attitude of the global community towards this country. And now where we are, this has changed from this point to this point. Maybe the rand was 100 rand per dollar, now it's 5 rand. Now, what does this thing do? It simplifies the reports that come to us. Make them smaller, simple, and straightforward. So the problem of dealing with reports like this, you do so many things, you end up not knowing what are you doing and where are you walking to. And I know it's very difficult to go to simplicity. But when you're in simplicity, you will conquer future complexities easily. And you dealt with the first complexity. You need to move from complexity. I know it's difficult to get out of that complexity. But when you are in simple road, simple situation, future complexities are easily dealt with. Because the key thing, sir, is that between us and yourselves, there must be effective communication.
We must understand one another very easily, agree on terms and languages that we're going to use. If you go then to this department, you speak about this analysis I've spoken about. If you go to the mandate, what you call as mandate, you are articulating mandate, and if you check in slide 20, you've got your mission and values and vision. I think your vision is well articulated. It's a state. That's what Sandila usually speaks about. You articulated state, not an activity. I think it's nicely articulated. But if you go to the slide 15, you speak about what you call the strategic goals, 1, 2, 3, fine. Well, I don't want to debate whether they are strategic or not. Because something called effective, I don't know whether it's tactical or strategic. When you say effective, governance, I don't know whether it's strategic or effective. Because again, sir, I'll explain why I'm raising this question. All these goals and conventions have got various times. There's a standard time for a strategic goal, a standard time for a tactical goal. There could be variations here and there. Efficient management is something we can achieve within 6 months or so, whatever, and so on. Do you want to call it a strategy, you want to call it a strategy goal? Does it feature there? So that's why the language between us and yourselves becomes important. If you look at slide 15, you've written that. And you are then move to slide 16. Slide 15 simply expands. It's the same statement, to be honest with you. If you look at slide 15. It's the same statement in slide 15, but you said more things in slide, you've articulated the anatomy of slide, what you call, that's what we've done. You have discussed the anatomy. What's the purpose of repeating that thing for our purpose? That's the question I'm asking. Okay, same thing in slide 19. I want to argue it's another repetition. But however, let me move quickly. Let's come to slide 21. It's already. You say you call them deliverables for the purpose of this committee, the consultations you have. We want to sit in an oversight meeting and call consultations deliverables in the context of this plurality and so on. Is this the state that we want to be and so on? Well, some people can say, yes, it's fine. It's all right. But let's come now to slide 23. Here, all right, now, this is where I was worried about my internal now. HR plan, you are approving, there could be a reason, it should maybe explain. Every year, you are producing an HR plan. It's approved. Is this the situation in the department? Every year, it's an HR plan, every year, implement, we approve, and so on. HR plan, and so on. That's the question I'm throwing. And then if you go again to page, slide 25. Slide 25 is similar to slide 24 on the asset register, but I'm just using a summary. Here it's plans against procurement plans. Our procurement plans always planned anew every year. Maybe let's explain that, right? Because I thought maybe you update, but then you, if that's a law, then I'm okay with that. Again, the 3-year audit, there is this other thing here in slide 25. The 3-year rolling audit strategy plan approved 16-17. The 3-year rolling audit strategy plan approved. The 3-year rolling audit strategy approved. Maybe you are saying that is also annual. You will tell us that. Because for record we must know. So that when you go to check for reference purposes, you must have actually said indeed that's the situation. And then we go to slide 26, I'm just selecting here one or two things, not everything. I mean, the one in the committee for the slide 26, let's deal with that number of progress reports on the implementation. reports. Is this what we want to send to the department and discuss? Right? Then you delivered on this. Can we call a press conference where they say, whether this department is doing well, there are 4 reports. Are sorted out. Is this what we want to engage with you and discuss? The worst one to me is 27. You will also correct me there if I'm wrong. There, listen to this draft white paper on audiovisual and digital content policy for South Africa approved 1617, right? Audiovisual and digital content bill for South Africa 2017-18. What are you saying there? Developed. It is the draft white paper set for the whole of 1617. It's a draft white paper on audiovisual whatever stuff. 2017, where for the whole year, maybe the parliament is responsible for delaying you there, is bill. 1819, visual and digital content bill of South Africa submitted to parliament. So for the whole year, 17 and 18, what were you doing? You were developing a bill, 17-18. I'm reading what is written here. For the whole year, you are developing a bill, 17-18, right? Right? Now, 18-19, audiovisual digital content bill of South Africa submitted to parliament for the whole year. Maybe the parliament is responsible for delaying issues here. And then if the parliament is weak, we must be told we are weak so that we can correct that. Now, this thing was started here in 1617, right? 1617, it is completed. It is, we're implementing it in 1920. In 1920. 1, 2, 3, 4 years. Remember, the purpose of this audiovisual stuff, audiovisual and digital content act, is supposed to achieve these things of plurality, diverse, whatever, and so on. It means these things are waiting for almost 4 years before we can make an impact on it. So that the whole 4 years, we're strolling, we're touring, we only implement on the 4th year.
Hopefully.
I don't want to comment on that one. 4 years. This is the third thing you said. 4 years. Why is this possible? Why does this happen? Why is this allowed to happen? Right? Again, you speak there of two monitoring reports. What are we going to do about that? Because, Chair, a monitoring report is an interdepartmental thing. As they implement, they monitor, and then when they come to us, having monitored, build their capacity, this is the difference we are making. Otherwise, having monitored and evaluated, because of the shortage of resources, we cannot move on plurality. These are the things I thought we need to engage with them on. But listen, 4 years, we're dealing with it. It doesn't make sense. Because in this instance, sir, it's either you have the capacity in the department. If you don't have the capacity, a service provider immediately, because you're not doing this thing for yourselves. You are doing it for the prospective beneficiaries, which is the community. So if you have... You don't have this capacity. Why do you spend 4 years here? And can you, it would be shocking if we can do cost-benefit analysis and check how much money has been spent on this activity between 1617 to 1920, but make no impact on anybody. Right? So monitoring, I've spoken about that. Come to the other one. Here's another one in slide 28. Regulatory Policy Framework of the National Public Broadcasting Service. Concept paper on the Regulatory Policy Framework of the National Public Broadcasting Service for approval. That is 1718. 1819, Cabinet approval. 1920, Framework of the National Public Broadcasting Service Corporation developed. But what do we call this? This is a true typical meaning of government. That's why, actually, this is not the good for the reputation of government. reputation of government. When they, people say the public sector is slow, they mean this. People are waiting for this. Because this framework is not what we want. Listen to it. That's the point I'm trying to understand. It. This framework is not what we want. It is what it is going to make when it is in place. That's why you must understand why this thing is wrong. What is important is not this framework. What is important is the change it's going to make once it's in place. Now, this year, we're still developing it. Right? When are we going to make impact on the lives of these people? One thing that I also don't understand, Chair, is maybe CFO will explain to me. I wish maybe we can ask the department one day to present to us their oversight plan of entities. Because that's very critical. Because when you talk transfers, I suspect CFO is transfers of money to those entities so that they lead to those outcomes. But the sense I have here is that your interaction with the oversight entities is purely based on signing the compact. I don't have a sense of how are they effectively accountable in terms of implementing and justifying the money that is given to them. So what I'm saying here is that I may sound to be unappreciating. Probably that's the difficulty I must give in the comment. And the intention is not to fight with anybody. And I can tell you, the issues I'm raising here, the performance information in Sunday is worse. I don't want to go, we've spoken about that. A goal, I will keep on saying it every day, is a stage you want to realize. The stage you want to realize cannot be an activity. At all. But I think we're stubborn on this one. But all I'm requesting is that maybe, Chair, not a formal oversight meeting. Other leadership, maybe we need again, as we said, to have discussions on what language that we can use between ourselves so that we are mutually intelligible. I deliberately use that word. What is intelligible is what can be understood. So that we are mutually intelligible. Because once we are simple and mutually intelligible, you will find that our relationship is so simple. It is the best relationship ever. And amongst the companies, what is written here? In the private sector, it would have been 5 pages. And everything is clarified in 5 pages. Because we are involved here on a lot of issues that have got nothing to do with us as politicians. I don't have to sit in a management meeting discussing activities and which manager walk, how many steps to which floor. That's why there's a temptation by one manager to articulate grievance. Yeah, I listen to one manager. Well, I totally leave. So immediately we enter that space, we discuss leaves. Well, I don't know why the manager is complaining about the leave. You see? So it's because it has become common for us to deal with internal issues of the department. The biggest way is my proposal, is that let's discuss the results with the department. Internal results and progress on those results. As a result, we'll be redeemed, we'll be set free from all these things that we are reading here. Because management here will be forced to solve. This thing they are reporting here, they will not produce the results. We have never solved these things. All what we must speak on is that you said by 6 months you would have achieved a particular result, achieve it. We're not going to tell you have an HR plan, you have an internal audit. You sort that out. We must demand our results from you guys. But all I'm saying, again, is the process, the framework, and I'm saying, current advisor, when they say situational analysis, let's critique. What is it? What situational analysis do you want to interact with the department about? All these that are written here, some beside, some with. Huh? So those are the questions that I think we must deal with. Because it's so lovely. If you look at this document of Tuesday, the preface by the minister, gives you, for instance, it's very impressive, this document, where it even says, when the constitution was established to deal with the transformation environment, it moves and say, at a certain point that we discover that ownership patterns are not right, you are dealing with the key issues now. Ownership patterns are not right, access is not right. Those are the things that the document is right, but the plans do not align with the sensibility that is articulated here, especially in the introductory phase by the minister. And I suspect it should be, when I was in MEC, most of the time these treatments were written by my bureaucrats. I don't know whether there's that thing which you prepare for the politician and you prepare nonsense for yourself. Right? Because this is brilliant in analyzing this one. Sorry for being so brilliant.
For us to be very clear, up to 5 o'clock, we allow, after a number of questions, we allow the department to respond. The plan yet was to have half a day for DOC and then half a day for GSI. We are losing it a bit now, but anyway, it's fine because it digs deep to the issues for our understanding and our advice to you. DOC? Is it because he kept on referring to Sunday?
I'm trying to defend myself.
Yet there is leadership.
I'm trying to defend myself.
In this department, there is leadership. There is Deputy Minister politically and there is Acting DG administrative.
Oh, yeah.
And Mazwandi Lungena up here. Sunday.
No, Chair. Sandile is going to respond to some of the issues which are raised, not because he's defending himself, but because he has a responsibility to respond to the committee on some of the questions. So that's why I just said he must respond.
So the GM says Sandile must delegate him to Sandile. Over to you, Sandile.
Thanks, DM and Chairperson. I withdraw my point about my defense. In any case, it was said in enlightenment. I think the committee must probably understand that we are the mercy of a template which is provided for by the National Treasury. That's a fact. So when we talk about HR plans, the template requires that. But what we can do, for the purpose of a presentation, we may in our presentation remove things like those. And obviously, but in the actual APP, we cannot interfere with that. But the second part is the slowness of how we are planning to do the service delivery through our amendments. I mean, if you look at it, Chairperson, we have been sitting with a 1998 policy on broadcasting. Remember at the time when the two departments went separated, the process started in 2011. The integrated ICT policy only was approved late last year. So in the integrated policy plan, we had a chapter on broadcasting. Now in the broadcasting, this is the chapter where we said we've taken to cabinet. There were areas from cabinet which required our intervention. The first was issues of merger, competition and acquisition, where they felt that we were now encroaching issues around competition laws, which are the terrain of the Competition Commission. But we've since sorted that out. Now the issue is that what we are trying to do is that once we have a new policy which would have address the trends, the online technology and its impact on the broadcasting side, you will have a policy that repeals almost the 1998 white paper policy. But again, because we can't implement the policy, we'll then have to submit an amendment to the current legislation, which is the 1998 Broadcasting Act, and all of, including the entirety of the Chapter 9 of the ECA. So it would be true to say that we are going to take long to reach our destination in terms of policy and regulations in the broadcasting or in the digital terrain. But at the same time, members must also understand that issues of media diversity were created for precisely for the issues of making sure that there's content diversification, there's plurality of views in how the MDTA facilitate or implement the community media project. I mean, one of the things that we talk about in the MDTA, which is again the issue where, as a department, we are sitting with the policy, but we don't implement policies. So you'll find that when you talk about content or transformation of the broadcasting industry, the MDTA will do that in terms of making sure that all languages, all people who have or who belong to the cultural diminished groups have their languages sustained, including Afrikaans, our indigenous languages. So in terms of content diversification, that is already catered for. Our worry is that in the post-digital domain, that's why we are running with the ICT, with the broadcasting workers. The same goes with transformation. We've done, last year there was a launch of the ICT, ICT triple BEE charter. Remember, since 2003, the sector has not really transformed as much. Even some of the initiatives would come from their own, out of their own initiatives, the companies. But with the ICT Council, which is obviously has its charter, which is implementing, those are some of the initiatives that that are already happening. And those are the things. We take the point to say, perhaps when you talk about, we are raising the issue of the country report. We've got Brand South Africa that specializes in giving us country perspectives through their indices. In our situational analysis in future, we'll try and reflect those because it's the information that we have. It's probably the issue of how we package the information to enable members to do their work. Just on the last point before I allow my colleagues to also ask this, when we talk about the accountability mechanism, which we've since said we are going to provide the committee the report, the one thing which the committee might also have to try and make sure that they are, you know, they try and keep up with is the issue around ICASA. That ICASA, because of the Chapter 9 institution, their things are actually regulated. In other words, the performance management system of ICASA is done jointly with the National Assembly. 2011, 2012, we came to present our view of what should be included in the performance agreement between the minister and the ICASA councillors. What is left for now is the committee again to be abreast in terms of the appointment of the panel of evaluators, which is also legislated in terms of Section 6A of the Constitution. Because what it says is that the minister must inform Parliament those whom have been appointed to assess the members of councillors. And secondly, once those are assessed, Parliament must also be involved in the whole process. So the ICASA councillors, I just have to add, will be done differently in terms of what, in terms of how we are managing other entities, which means that, I mean, at some stage you may have to call a separate meeting just to deal with the issue of accountability of ICASA and ourselves, because it also involves the National Assembly, which is this committee. But having said that, we do take the points, but I think my colleagues would also add, but the issue around the transformation and the policies is actually snailing, but it's because of the process, because we have got to have a bill, got to send it far. You know, it's those things, yeah.
thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I can see that, you know, there's something And I commend Honorable Ngungubele for this, but it's outside this particular process. I could see that, you know, he's very active on this particular matter. But I think to add on what, you know, my colleagues, the advisor to the minister, has just articulated on, when we submit our plans to DPME, there are specific things that they look for, you know, in an APP or in a strat plan. When we look at Treasury looks at particular, you know, deliverables in your APP or in your strat plan. And then same as with the Office of the Auditor General. So the issues of an HR plan, I know they can be boring, but, you know, it's mandatory for any other department, you know, to report on this. And the purpose is to look as to whether, you know, your HR plan is aligned to the strategy that we have put forth, and we get audited on those particular issues. Same thing as with the procurement plan, it's boring, but it's part of Treasury's, you know, initiative of tightening controls to ensure that, you know, you don't say you are going to buy 10 tables, and the next thing you go and buy cars. So we need to give them the procurement plan so that, you know, they align it to what we have planned for. So in essence, the DPME, the Office of the Auditor General, and the Office of National Treasury, including the DPSA, because of the DPME does consult, they look at all those issues, you know, holistically on what is it that, you know, we are complying with. So these are compliance matters. I know that they are boring, but, you know, at some stage when we've got time, when we take you through these plans, then you'll understand their importance, why they are put into this particular plan, so that, you know, they don't become ultimately, you know, irrelevant. The other aspect that we spoke about, I think I'm not going to repeat what Sandile said, is, you know, the kind of consultation, you know, that we do, you know, conduct. I think with other departments that have got, you know, provincial probably presence, it becomes easier. But with us, you know, it takes time. And at times when you are at an advanced stage dealing with some other matters, you know, you find that, you know, Department A, you know, needs to be consulted in full, and to ensure that, you know, we ultimately fulfill our constitutional obligations. But we take your word that maybe, Honorable Ngubel, maybe the way we write as officials on the other part becomes so boring than what we ultimately, you know, prepared for our executive authorities with regards to those particular issues. So, for instance, I think when we look into the other matters of, you know, some of the policies that we intend doing, they've got a ripple effect as far as, you know, when we brand a country. We've seen most of the countries when they brand it, you know, they also take into account what kind of policies, you know, ICT policies they have, what kind of infrastructure they have. And this, we believe that, you know, should we be able to, you know, open some opportunities for investment, most of the people will be able, you know, to be employed. You know, our country will become, you know, the number one destination, you know, for tourism, because of people know that, you know, whatever that we are doing, you know, we are able, you know, to not to separate them from their world when they are around the country. But I think we take the point on some of the matters to say that, you know, how would we ultimately, you know, from the committee, the areas when we report, what is it that, you know, you're gonna be interested in, so that you are able to report further. I think we take that point that, you know, instead of actually even complying fully, but we ultimately, you know, put it in such a manner that, you know, will be much more, what did you call it, mutually intelligible from all parties, so that we are able to deal with it. And then the other aspect, if you remember last week, I stated that, you know, we need to be strengthening, you know, our entity oversight that Honorable Tolashi directed us, that we need to look at the holistic approach in terms of looking at our entities. And I think we'll be focusing on that. We'll prioritize it so that, you know, we know what are the matters that, you know, we we'll be looking at, and we hope also to get buy-in, you know, from our political principals, so that it's easier that, you know, things do not slip through our fingers, and we're very much aware as to what are the things that we need to be looking at from our entities. I think also going back to the issues that Honorable Tolash raised earlier, that, you know, we don't need to be sister, sister, or brother, brother. I think everybody else needs to do their work, and we really appreciate, you know, the initiative of a meeting with Telecom, because of, at the moment, Honorable Mungubele, if we had a very good, you know, the risk audit analysis or the risk plan, you know, analysis of our plan, wouldn't be sitting where we are sitting with DTT matters, because of, you cannot have one department doing half of what you are supposed to do, because now we are at the mercy that even if we want to reverse everything, we are not actually the department responsible, you know, for appointing, you know, service providers. So some of these activities that we put in here, they are boring, but if we had a very good risk plan, you know, somebody would have picked it up that, you know, should USASA take this kind of decisions like what they are taking now? What are the implications? What do you do? But we cannot, even the deputy minister can't go there and want to discipline an official at USASA, because of, you know, she does not have, you know, a local stand on that particular matter. We cannot actually tell USASA what to do, because they report to the Minister of Telecoms. So if we had a very good risk plans and risk audit plans, they could have ultimately raised the flag long time ago. So some of these plans, as I stated, will come back, you know, and share them with you and see, so that, you know, you can understand. But again, the point is taken. We'll ultimately put our plans in a language that will be much more appealing as far as what the committee would like to hear on progress.
No, thank you very much. Maybe on all what you have raised and the responses, there must be some way of influencing the template. Because you are tied, your hands are tied by the reporting format. That does reflect on expectations of people out there. I think this is what the honorable member was saying. And maybe as the committee, we just need to look at how we can influence that, so that you are not worried, acting teaching. We are going to break at some stage, but if we can finish the questions, I really want us to finish the OC, if we can, before we break. But if we can't, then we'll go beyond lunchtime. By the way, we are supposed to break at 12. Honorable Kumubele, I always expect that from him, to have a follow-up, which is fine, because it helps. It helps you, Chief. Another thing is the Chief when he comes.
I'll be very short, Chair. No, I'll be very short, Chair. I think there's been a useful response in a number of areas that clarify where the problem comes from. I just wanted to clear something. I'm a fanatic of issues of compliance. But things get reported to particular points and under particular circumstances where they are relevant. That's the point I'm making. So where I come from, we got clean audits, Moody's, because we adhere to those things. They are not boring, but I'm categorizing what is supposed to be reported where and not where. In others can be mere attachments.
Okay. I think we're doing very badly. A number of members are waiting.
No,
it's not that it's rubbish what you say. Pardon my language, it was very useful. It's just that we're a bit many. Honorable Tulash.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe I appreciate the response from the SDG, especially on the issue that Honorable Mubele raised. And Honorable Mubele raised issues that we also, you know, indicated to say this is what I want to hear from the department. And for instance, slides 28 under the media transformation and diversity policy implemented. That was really a problem for me. But in slide 29, I hear and I accept that the department doesn't have a provincial representation to an extent like all other departments. However, they've been able to help in resources and so on. I really would want, maybe it's a detail that needs to be attached in the so that we can be all comfortable to say, when you talk about sending visas, at the back of my mind, I should just, because I'm a South African, I really would want to see a situation where all nine programs are covered, and if there's a tenth one, and I can get a response, maybe an explanation, why is that the case, maybe, because of the challenges of that particular province, so that I can sit here and be comfortable to say all nine provinces are treated equally and are being serviced as such. So, Chairperson, I don't want to get into slide by slide, because yes, the issue of the number of funded posts, it's already the manager did really respond to that, but her response is very brilliant, but it doesn't make sense to me. I'm very sorry, I'm being honest. Because where I'm seated, I always have this common understanding that you give us money to pay this amount of people. That's it. And you expect us, when you audit us, you audit us accordingly. And if anything is not as such, then it becomes a problem for me, and forever the department is going to be found wanting because of what is being done by, for instance, how they are being audited and the areas of funding so far as everything. So I'm saying, Chair, I'm really covered with the administration of Honorable Mubele with all my clients that I have to try any questions from. Thank you so much.
Honorable Tulash nearly cost me his opportunity to chair the meeting. No, I was asked by the chair. He's going. So he asked me to chair. In my entire life, I've never chaired the National Portfolio Committee. I'm more excited. Honorable Van Dam.
Thanks, Acting Chair. I think it fits into the many actors that are in the room, so it is quite suitable that you are. My questions, I'm going to be very quick and short. I think the general theme in your presentation was we have no money, can we have more money? But to be frank, I don't see a situation where we stand up and say Treasury needs to give you more money. I mean, we've just been downgraded to junk status. Everyone's tightening their belts. I think you're just going to have to be creative about how you use the money that you allocated. I really don't see the situation where Treasury has more money for you. Particularly, this is an issue we discussed last week. We cannot motivate for more money when new cars, for example, are being purchased. Everyone needs to tighten their belts. Particularly our leaders in the country, they need to set the example. There's no time for luxuries right now. Belts need to be tightened and austerity measures need to be put in place. So the next time you're here, I'd actually like to see in your budget what it is that you've done to cut costs. And also, your mandate is really quite simple in terms of the presidential proclamation. It's drafting policy, it's drafting policy. Secondly, it's providing information dissemination and publicity, that's GCIS, and it's branding South Africa, which is brand SA. So I don't see in this where the department needs more money. I just think you need to better use your money, you need to cut on unnecessary spending and you'll be fine. just in terms of your presentation, I just have some quite specific questions. The outcome of the colloquium on media transformation, I know that document is still being drafted, but what are the key takeaways? What would the department like to see happen about media transformation? What are the practical things that you'd like to see once the media is transformed? What does it mean? I mean, transformation means different things for different people. For the department, what does a transformed media in South Africa mean, and how would you go about achieving that? And then you also say there's a media transformation and diversity policy. Where is that policy right now, and can it be made public so we can see what government's plans are about transforming the media? And then I'd like also like an update on your litigation, on your various litigation. The digital migration policy litigation in the Concords, where is that? The challenging of the SABC inquiry reports, ministerial advisor, I suppose you can give us an update on that. Is that SABC inquiry report still going to be challenged? Have papers been filed? If it's not going to be challenged anymore, why not? And then the various litigation related to the public protector's report. I remember there was a court case to take that public protector's report to review. Is that still on the cards? And then your legislation. Audiovisual and digital content bill. What would that try and achieve? What's that going to be about? And then the draft position paper on the national broadcaster. A little bit more detail about that. What does that position paper seek to achieve? I think that's it for now.
Okay. Can we just so that we break after that, take the question? Honorable Pandey.
Chair, my questions are mostly on the community media, but I also want to reflect on the AG report of last week where it was indicated that after transfers and subsidies that 80.8% of the budget goes to the compensation of employees, and I just want to know if that should raise concern. Then my question on the procurement process of the set-top boxes, that was answered, but that also leaves me with that it will contribute to the delay of the switch-off date. And the thing is, with the community media, the delay in the full implementation of the digital migration program is impacting on the availability of spectrum, and this is affecting the community media in such a way that there's a moratorium on the licensing of the community media. And I also want to refer to the audiovisual white paper. The indicator on the community media there is that the number of community radio stations provided with broadcasting infrastructure and media development and diversity, the mandate, that was put on hold pending the finalization of this white paper. And you heard what my colleague said, it's going to take almost 4 years. And also on page 11, it's mentioned under dot 4 that despite the growth of the community broadcasting support over the years, it has limitations as it's not informed by a comprehensive policy. Now, I want to know from the department, what is the immediate remedies that the department will implement with time frames? Because for me, if there's a moratorium on the licenses, and it also says here on page 11, the government has committed to roll out at least one community radio in every district municipality. I just want you to explain to me, if there's a moratorium, how do you intend to roll out community radio? And also with all these restrainments on the community media, how do you actually are going to deliver on your mandate with regards to community media? Thank you.
Okay, another minute.
Maybe it's good that I'm the last to say something. It was coming this way and then it turns around. and then we started at the back. But you see, because yeah, I cannot complain. You see. Yeah, it is not within me to do that. But Chair, most of the questions are covered. But the issue that is concerning me, Chair, I don't know, maybe it is a process issue, is the one for the positions that are not approved. You see, I've been thinking here, saying, God, I don't understand. With my experience, a position is not approved up until such time it is budgeted. How does this position get approved without being budgeted? Because you know, you look at your overall strategy, you look at the departmental strategies, and obviously your HR strategy is obviously informed by the overall. And then when you do the approval of the organogram, once it is submitted, once you approve it, you are approving also the budget. A budget is already allocated. Maybe there's a misalignment somewhere, or I mean, things are done the other way. Maybe I'm not familiar with the process that is followed here, more especially when it comes to the approval process. So that's my big concern. Because if we submit activities which are not approved, allocated, sorry, budget, I really do not understand. Because for me, if your organogram is not allocated a budget, for me it is not approved. Unless something is confusing me, yeah. Or maybe there are changes that we don't know. Okay. Let me just leave, because all other issues of litigation and the issues that were raised by Ukungubelo, more especially the repetition, develop, I was also a bit concerned. You know, you develop for 2 or 3 years, and I understand the problem could be with us as parliamentarians. Maybe we track some of this process. So they don't want to commit, you know, on something that they do not have a control over. You see. But I think I am okay.
Thank you very much. I don't need to explain anything as to why I handle it that way.
Yeah.
Because of the approach that because earlier I had a different approach, so I changed it. As a result, I'm skipping because he did ask a question, Honorable Tate. I'll go to Honorable Mashoba so that we close it. Just to allow members to reflect. See, I've almost said, because you
no,
said
no,
it.
No,
you said it. Okay.
In terms of your report, give us more hope, though it raised many questions. I'm just looking at page, there are many several pages, I suppose, the first page. In page 7, Chair, there's an issue. I missed this page. He's talking about the sector boxes. I'm not sure about the post office, how far about that program, and where that program is done. Which province? I'm not sure whether it's in page 7, because I'm trying to peruse here. But I need more clarity about those sector boxes. What's happening about those sector boxes? In which area now? Do you have information about the post office? How far about the
the sector box, please.
Fine.
With fish fries, okay, which is there. Second, the chair, in terms of its digital migration, okay, let me stop there, Chair, because I don't want to prolong my question, but I need to clarify in page 5 in terms of the sector boxes. Then maybe I will come after if you not close this chapter.
Unfortunately, that's the last chance. Just on page 6, bullet point 3, the program has commenced in other provinces where an overall 6,840 registration. This is 2016-17. It's up to now. When is it? If you can clarify that, and these are only registration, and then how do you think you will cover the rest? The rest of South Africa. Is it 6 million? 5 million? Is there any hope that we'll cover those people? Okay. We can respond to these questions before we break for lunch, but there are not many. Over to you, DM.
I think it's important for me to respond to the issue of the cars and the perception that the cars are being purchased. As members of the committee, we must live with some of the realities. Reality number one, in terms of the cars, there are no cars that are bought by the department yet for us. Two, the department is mandated by security measures in some of the things that they should perform on behalf of the executives. One being, if the car has exceeded certain kilometers, by law, the department is supposed to purchase the car or cars for the executives. That's the reality of the matter. Now, one will get to realize that if Zuma appoints her or him, so that there's a clear briefing on how these things happen. I must be upfront here and say, all the cars which I have inherited as a deputy minister, they have exceeded the mileage. However, I had requested the department to say the cars that I'm having can take me from point A to point B, meaning from the airport in Johannesburg to Union Buildings. Until such time we have proper funding, cars can be purchased. The car which I'm using here in Cape Town has exceeded 150 kilometers. And in terms of security, even the protectors are complaining that it is not correct for them to drive such cars. Cars must be purchased. However, I have taken an undertaking to say, point A, point B, those cars can be used. But if I have to drive from here to Beaufort West, it means that the department must hire a car for me at a very high cost. That alone, you should take it into account as you are making such decisions and such statements as the committee. Now, some of the things that are reported by the department here, they don't need political footballing by the members of the committee, but to face reality, they should not be used as breaking news or some headlines in the media. It is required. And once you are driven by those people,
from time to time they will remind you that the car that you are driving you using is in fact not protected, two, it's illegal for us to drive you. Whatever that happens at this very moment, we as the people that are driving you and protectors are going to be held accountable. Ne? So we need to understand their requirements, facts, in whatever that the department is reporting to the committee, because remember, we must be transparent in terms of reporting to the committee. Now, if you are not transparent in hiding things because we are scared that you might use these things against the executives or against the department to gain a political mileage, it's going to be very difficult for the officials to be transparent on some of the issues. So we need not to use our political footballing when we are dealing with the matters of reality and matters of fact in our reports. I'm pleading, Chair. Thank you.
The advisor
from the minister's office is going to respond to some of the questions which are raised here, and as well as the acting DG and the CFO will clarify some of the questions which are raised here. Thank you.
Okay. Before that, there is a hand.
Thanks, Chair. I think it's...
He says it's a matter of exigence.
The department has cars that were bought in 2014. If you go to the public and you say a car that's 3 years old is not, you know, good enough for you, or it's not safe, no one will buy that argument, and I actually don't buy that argument. It is possible to say to the Department of Public Service, hi, your rules do say that once mileage has been reached, cars must be purchased. But because of the tough economic times South Africa is in, can we deviate from this section of the ministerial handbook? I am very sure that they'll be more than happy to deviate from that. So I think it is a fallacy to say that, oh no, the ministerial handbook requires us to buy new cars, therefore we must. It's tough economic times, everyone must tighten their belts, and I believe this department must set the example.
I'm going to close this matter because
you
we
close it because,
because we the reason why let's not do this. We really dealt with this matter last week, members, and we closed it. Remember, we said there is this ministerial handbook. We discussed all those things, and we said something must be done. But take into cognizance that there is a security issue on this matter. I think we did talk about this, Saivala, Ngolotok, so I don't want us to go back to this thing. Just that I was not sure when I was out if it was raised again, but it's clear that it was raised. Can we go to acting DG?
thank you, Honorable Chair. You know, to be honest, the department does not have even what we call luxury. You know, we are cut to the bone. At times we even fight with our political principals when we tell them that, you know, this cannot be done. I mean, even now we don't even have money to buy the Deputy Minister Crocker and cutlery. We had to go out and find pieces of this and that. It could sound as a joke, but that's a reality. That, you know, we actually do that. And I think they do understand the situation that we are in. And we will provide, a report on what is it that we have cut. We have cut many of the costs, but what we are still faced with today is that how do we cut costs? I don't know if ever it's possible, because we are faced with staff that are sick, that are grieved about the fact that, you know, they are dealing with other people. And that on its own, it's also a cost-cutting measure, but, you know, based on an understanding. But in reality is, you know, we'll end up, you know, with people that are sick, and at times, you know, we could be facing even, you know, more grievances around that particular matter. With regards to the key transformation issues from the colloquium, we have just finalized all the input, and in terms of what is in that particular document, at the moment, I think it will be very much unfair because of to discuss the issues, because we haven't even shared it with the minister and deputy minister, because of the colloquium output is meant for actually regulating the sector at the end of the day. So we still need to get guidance as to what is it that, you know, we need to regulate. For instance, if we need to regulate ownership and management, or if we need to regulate, you know, the content, or, you know, the issues of, you know, investment in that particular sector. So it's something that at the moment we cannot share in details, because of it's a document that is being worked on by officials. By the end of the week, it will be finalized and it will be presented, you know, to the minister and deputy minister. With regards to the litigation on the Concord matter, we're still waiting for the ruling. The matter has been heard, and then we are still waiting for an answer with regards to that. And then on the matters that are related to the positions, I think the CFO will ultimately, raise that. But these matters, the way it's so complicated is that, you know, it's regulated by two departments. We'll do the organizational design to say that, you know, what are the numbers of, what is it that we need to do in terms of our strategy, at what level, and we'll submit it to DPSA, they will approve, and then you go to Treasury. Treasury says, yes, but those positions have been approved, but, you know, we are giving you 1 million instead of the 6 million that one, but that, I think the CFO will articulate further on those particular matters. With regards to the audiovisual white paper, I think with regards to most of the policies on broadcasting, they're still based on the old way, you know, of doing things that is analog, and now we are in the digital era. And in terms of the program that we are running with digital migration, the process is meant to encourage, you know, the sector, you know, to have more content that is, you know, is relevant, you know, to the country. So we also, in terms of the audiovisual white paper, you know, intend to transform the sector so that, you know, we can have more channels, more content, and also in all, you know, official languages, and be acceptable and accessible to all, you know, in the country. So that is the process, or the main objective around those particular areas. And then with regards to the set-top boxes, is that, you know, the set-top boxes, when they are manufactured, you know, when the suppliers have been paid, they are routed to the post office, and then we know for connection we'll take them back to the post office. So as is now, with regards to set-top boxes, we're still using the stock that is currently sitting in the post offices. So the suppliers or the manufacturers cannot give us more stock because of their contracts have been cancelled. So that's where the situation is. Hence, we're stating even last week that we are running short of the DTH boxes, but when we need them, we can go to the distributing post offices, you know, to take them, to connect them where we are. So at the moment, we haven't reached a point whereby we have run out of the set-top boxes. We are still ultimately having stock in the post offices, and we hope that when this process, or when this challenge is with the ISASA that we are having, at the time that, you know, they get resolved, we'll be in a crisis, a major crisis. But the DTH boxes are the major challenge, because of it's a totally different box with a total different challenge. So this is where we are at the moment. And then with regards to covering the rest of the provinces, honorable members, when you look at the beneficiaries, you know, we are targeting, you know, people that have got nothing, that know nothing, most of them, you know, in those communities. And if we do not run a very good awareness and campaign process, then we're not going to be able to, you know, reach everyone. If you look at the topography of some other areas, they only have one, you know, accessibility of one radio station. So if they cannot get information, you know, on set-top boxes, the likelihood is that we might not be able to reach. But at the moment, the way we have been dealing with matters, because of late we also partnered with the GCIS that we bring in all our communicators in all provinces in one room, so that, you know, we start ultimately, you know, engaging them or educating them about this process, so that they can be able, you know, to assist us in terms of dissemination of information, you know, in the other in other provinces. So I think with the other question, the question of the review of the ad hoc committee and the public protector's review report, I'm not aware as to where the process is. Probably, I'm not sure if, you know, the minister's advisors got that particular information. And I'll also ask him, you know, to respond to the draft paper on the broadcasting policy.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Just on cost containment measures, just to let the members know, Department of Communication was one of the departments that has cut on the distribution of the newspapers in the last financial year, before even Treasury could cut on this day. We went on to cut on cell phone allowance. We are subsidizing the department. If we have to go and put the cost containment measures against Chairperson, it means even when the portfolio committee is calling us, it's only the DG that must travel to here if we have to cut to the bone. That is what it means. But I just want to assure the committee that all the nice to have in the department, we don't have. Even if on your visit last time, we didn't have funds to cater you. We were lucky that you were catered by GCIS. So we can't. We don't have anything to cut. We are the bones. So I don't know what more to cut, because there's no bones. So it's just painful, Chairperson, that you know, it's very hard for you to go and cut something that you don't have. And it's unfortunate, Honorable Madam. I don't know where to cut anymore, because I'm an enemy of everybody. The officials that were coming from DTPS, Chair, they came with cell phone allowance of 3,500. I've reduced it to 1,200. And it was a hurdle. It was something that we fought about, but it was something to be done. And we have implemented those policies. We have put policies in place. And that's how far we have gone to make sure that we appreciate the cost containment measures that we're in and we are living in. On the issue of the structure, I think let me just put it here. If I could put in the Honorable Punguwele previous slide. When we draw IDPs in municipalities, we say this is our plan. We call this time is our strategic plan. Then you are saying, what resources do I need to implement this strategy that I've put in place? What resources do I need to put this to implement this IDP in place? And when you look at the resources, you start with looking at the structure. What kind of structure do we need when they're saying we are a Department of Communication? If we have to perform entity oversight, we have to do policy, you have to do digital migration, what do you need? Then after you have put what do you need, you do the costing of saying, look, this is the structure that if it gets implemented, it will make us to achieve our mandate as a department. Then after that, you do the costing and say, for me to achieve this, these are the financial resources that we need. Unfortunately, the structure, the way we operate, is that after you have developed the strategy, you draw the structure, you do consultation with the Department of Public Service and Administration. They benchmark the levels that you even want to do, to say, look, this is the kind of the structure that can fit the Department of Communication as it is. Then they approve the structure. But unfortunately, it doesn't mean the approved structure, the 307 posts, you have the financial resources to put it. That's why when we do the HR plan, if we're operating in a normal environment, every year you will have the number of posts that you will be filling in order to achieve at that 310, because there is no way in the first year or 2 years of operation you can fill the entire structure and the department becomes operation. So it, in terms of the HR plan, it goes into phases. In the first year, you will fill this one. In the second year, you will fill this phase. The third year, until you are a fully fledged organization that is functional. And maybe lastly, let me respond to the issue of the compensation of employees to work. Honorable Fandek, we are worried because, remember, in every department that starts, is the ministry that starts the department. So obviously the people in the ministry are the ones that get appointed before. Then you come with your compliance issues. Whether we like it or not, for you to have a finance unit, you must have segregation of duties. In HR, you need segregation of duties for certain things to happen. That's why you see your compensation of employees being so huge. But the biggest worry that we have is that, because the bigger chunk was given for the formation of the ministry, no money was given for the core function. So if you look at entity oversight and your DTT and your police, it's a worrying factor that these are the core of the department, that we need people that we can take the mandate of the department forward. But because of the resources, you find yourself in one team. But we are trying to make sure that even though there is segregation of duties in certain areas, sometimes we compromise the control and we put the policies in place in terms of how do we deal with this matter. But if we were to be honest with you, it's an anomaly, because if you're operating in a normal environment, your core function is supposed to be better than your administration function, because those are the core that runs your department that makes you to perform better. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe before that, we need to start with the moratorium on broadcasting, community broadcasting, that is. Now, it's not everyone who's affected. Areas like Gauteng, Limpopo are affected because where ICASA cannot guarantee you spectrum, obviously they cannot issue license. So there are areas, because otherwise MTDA would close shop if there was just moratorium on community broadcasting in terms of allocation of spectrum, broadcasting spectrum, that is. Now, again, if you look at the policy now, we are addressing the 1998 policy, which is no longer applicable. When you sign at the World Trade Organization, some of the treaties that we signed, we were saying we want to trade on content and broadcasting. But then we have not been able to, you know, to make sure that there's environment which is conducive for instance, domestic or international investors. So what we've done in essence, we've also increased the percentage of a foreign. Currently, if you look at the SAA, the ECA, it limits the investment by a foreigner to 20%. So if you're a foreign person wanting to invest in any of the broadcasting industry in the country, you are currently only limited to 20%. We've increased that. But we've also said we need to prepare the sector and government in large to say, how do we broadcast in the era of broadband environment? Remember, we're moving from DTT, but we would also be broadcasting in the era of broadband. So those are some of the elements that we've said currently are not being addressed, and we are trying to address those. And lastly, regarding the litigation by the SABC, I can speak on what I know. Obviously, there's now an interim board, and I'm not privy to the discussions of the interim board. They may have said, look, we are proceeding with the litigation, we're not. So it would be very unfair of me to comment on the litigation of the OCBC board.
That's not the question I asked. I asked about the Minister of Communications, the former Minister of Communications. Remember, she said she was going to take that section and the report on review. So I don't know whether papers were ever filed for that or whether it was just an intention.
Okay.
So where is that now? Is this paper still going to be filed or has the matter been dropped?
Okay, I misread through you, Chairperson. My understanding is that from what I've seen, the papers have been filed. And this is the information that I have. Well, of course, then it would have been, at that time, she would not have, you know, predicted that she would be changed. But the papers have been filed. That's the information that I have, unfortunately. That's all.
Anything left?
Chair, nothing left except to say that, in fact, to emphasize that we dealt with the money in the last legislative session. And we have agreed that the Office of the Chair will work with the legal team of the National Assembly for us to be advised further on this matter. I think we have dealt with this matter extensively, and the Department is committed to give as much information as they could, and we're all simplified. I think we're just waiting for our own processes that we agreed on, that then we'll be advised accordingly going forward, so that we don't crucify them and make them to commit things that, in fact, it would be illegal for them to stand up. Let's follow our own processes. I know we're really itching and wanting to know, however, let's follow our and wait for our own processes that we agreed upon and the portfolio committee.
Chair, I think Honorable Tolaki said the most, but the same applies to the our outstanding meeting with the National Treasurer. My understanding is that there is a decision already on this particular matter, and it would be wrong for us to deal with some of the issues that have been raised as if there is no decision. And it will be wrong as well to want to review a decision of the committee when there is no need to review it. There is a decision of the committee to meet with the National Treasurer to address the issue of funding for the department and the entity. And that decision, as far as I am, as far as I know, still stands.
Thank you very much. I'm not sure how many times must we say this. But it's fine, you can say it 100 times. We are now going to break. I think as the committee, we are also the bones. When it comes to meals, we're also the bones. As a result, you'll be having finger lunch instead of a sit-down meal. Let's adjourn, and then when we come back, we'll start with GCIS. I think we are done with the DOC. We'll go to the second department, which is GCI. We are off on the condition. We are off now. I thought you wanted to say something.
No.
Oh, okay. Members will break and come back at quarter to two. Quarter to two will be back. Thanks.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah.